give you the
Yes, I'm there.
Okay, are you content?
Yes.
Okay.
Proceed. I'll go straight to page 6. To page 6, Chair. In which chapter 1. Chapter 1 share deals with the definitions, application, object, and establishment of authority. Definitions. On clause 1, if this act, unless the context otherwise indicates, accounting records. Accounting records means information in written or electronic form containing the tax account of the property practitioner as required in terms of this Act, including but not limited to records of all transactions involving trust monies, general and subsidiary ledgers and other documents and books used in the administration of the trust accounts. And B, in relation to the property practitioner's business as such, means information in written or electronic form concerning the financial affairs of the business as required in terms of this Act or any other Act that may be applicable to the business of the property practitioner, including but not limited to records of assets, liabilities, income, expenses, general and subsidiary ledgers, and other documents and books used in the preparation of financial statements of the business. Thank you, Chair. Just give the call to the administration.
Accounting records, that's the definition, and we have been discussing in the program. Are we here? Yes.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The other meeting session, Chair, was the definition of audit. Audit has the meaning ascribed to it in terms of the Auditing Profession Act in 2005, Act Number 26 of 2005. Thank you, Chair.
We agreed that we don't want to audit in any other form except how it is defined in the Auditing Profession. Do we agree?
Thank you, Chair. Auditor means an individual or firm registered in terms of Section 37 or 38 of the Auditing Professions Act, 2000, Act Number 26 of 2000.
Definition of an auditor? Do you
concur? Thank you, Chair. Authority means the property practitioner, the regulatory authority established in terms of Section 5.
Authority?
Board means the board of authority contemplated in chapter 2.
Board of authority will be defined in chapter 2 by the board of authority.
That's what it means. Do you agree? Candidate property practitioner means a person who has not yet met all the qualification or experience required as prescribed to practice as a property practitioner and who is undergoing training under the supervision of a property practitioner or a program created by the authority.
Definition of a candidate property practitioner.
Agreed? CEO means the chief executive officer of the authority appointed in terms of Section 70.
Okay.
Chairperson means the chairperson of the board.
Not me, the chairperson of the board.
Code of conduct means a code of conduct prescribed in terms of Section 61.
Code of conduct, yes.
Consumer means a consumer as defined in Section 1A or C of the Consumer Protection Act, number 2008, Act number 8 of 2008.
Agreed?
Mm-hmm. All right. Convenience means a convenience is defined in terms of in Section 1 of the Attorneys Act, 1979, Act number 3 of 1979.
Agreed?
Mm-hmm. Days means a calendar date including Saturday, Sunday, and public holidays, but excluding the period between 15 December to 15 January of the preceding year.
Okay.
Department means the Department of Human Settlements.
Mm-hmm.
Estate Agency Affairs means the Estate Agency Affairs Act 1976, Act Number 112 of 1976.
Agreed.
Estate Agency Affairs Board means the Estate Agency Affairs Board established by Section 2 of the Estate Agency Affairs Act.
Agreed.
Funds means the Property Practitioner's Fidelity Fund contemplated in Section 34. Identify the certificate in either. Identify the certificate contemplated in section 41, 47, 1. Immediate family member means a parent, child, brother or sister, or any person married to such a person, or a life partner of such a person.
Okay.
Inspector means an inspector appointed in terms of section 24.
I will see if there is anything that you want to catch up on here. So then just continue and then, yeah.
Mandatory disclosure form means the form refers to in section 67. Minister means the Minister of Human Settlements. Principal means a property practitioner who is a director of a company, member of a close corporation, trustee of a trust, a partner of a partnership, or owner of a sole proprietorship that operates as a property practitioner. Page number 7. When we come to the property practitioner definition, a property practitioner means any natural or juristic person who or which, for the acquisition or gain of his, her or its own account or in partnership in any manner holds himself, herself, itself out as a person who or which directly or indirectly on the instructions of or on behalf of any other person, by auctions or otherwise sells, purchases, manages, or publicly exhibit for sale property or any business undertaking, or negotiate in connection therewith, or converses on a take, or offers to converse a seller or purchaser in respect thereof. Roman figure 2, lets or hires or publicly exhibit for hire property or any business undertaking, or negotiates in connection therewith, or converses or undertakes or offers to converse a lease, a lessee or lessor in respect thereof. Roman figure 3, collects or receives any monies payable on accounts of a lease of a property or a business undertaking. Roman figure 4, provides, procure, facilitates, secure, or otherwise obtains or markets financing for or in connection with the management, sale, or lease of a property or business undertaking, including a provider of bringing finance, and a bond broker, but excluding any person contemplated in the definition of financial institution in section 1 of the Financial Services Board Act 1990, Act number 97 of 1990. Number 5, Roman figure 5, in any other way, acts or provides services as intermediary or facilitator with the primary purpose to or to attempt to effect the conclusion of an agreement to sell and purchase or hire or let, as the case may be, a property or a business undertaking, including, if performing the acts mentioned in the subparagraph, a homeowner association, but does not include a person who does not do so in the ordinary course of the business. B, where the person is a natural person or that person in the ordinary course of the business offers a property for sale which belongs to him or her in his or her personal capacity. C, an attorney or a candidate attorney as defined in section 1 of the Attorneys Act 1979, Act number 53 of 1979. Or D, a sheriff as defined in section 1 of the Sheriff Act 1986, Act number 90 of 1986, when he or she performs any functions contemplated in paragraph A of this definition, irrespective of whether or not he or she has been ordered by a court of law to do so. Or, Roman figure 6, renders any other services specified by the minister on the recommendation of the board from time to time by notice in the Gazette. B, A property practitioner includes any person who sells by auction or otherwise, or markets, promotes, or advertises any part, unit, or section of, or rights or shares, including time share, and fraction ownership in the property or property development. C, includes any person who, for remuneration, manages a property on behalf of another. D, includes a trust in respect of which a trustee, for the acquisition of gain on account of the trust, directly or indirectly, in any manner holds, are that it is a business which, on the instructions of or on behalf of any other person, performs any act referred in paragraph 8. For the purpose of section 34, 46, 48, 49, 59, 60, 61, and 65, includes Roman figure 1, any director of the company or a member of a close corporation who is a property practitioner as defined in paragraph A. Roman figure 2, any person who is employed by a property practitioner as envisaged in paragraph A and performs on his or her or on its behalf any act referred to in subparagraph Roman figure 1, 2, 4, 5, and 6 of that paragraph. Roman figure 3, any trustee of a trust which is a property practitioner as envisaged in paragraph D. Roman figure 4, any person who is employed by a property practitioner as envisaged in paragraph B and perform on its behalf any act referred to in subparagraph Roman figure 1, 2, 4, 5, 6 of paragraph A. And Roman figure 5, any person who is employed by a property practitioner contemplated in paragraph A or B to manage, supervise, or control the day-to-day operations of the business of that property practitioner. F, a property practitioner includes any person who is employed by or renders a service to an attorney or a professional company as defined in section 1 of the Attorneys Act 79, page 8, other than an attorney or a candidate attorney, and whose duties consist wholly of primary of the performance of any act referred to in the paragraph in the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6 of paragraph 8, on behalf of such an attorney or professional company, whose action will be specifically covered by the attorney's fidelity fund and not the property practitioner's fidelity fund. G, for the purposes of section 61 and any regulation made under section 70, include any person who was a property practitioner at the time when he or she was guilty of any act or omission which allegedly constitute sanctionable conduct referred to in section 62. But who does not include an attorney who, on his own account or as a partner in a firm of attorneys or as a member of the professional company, as defined in section 1 of the Attorneys Act 1979, or a candidate attorney as defined in that section, who performs any act referred to in paragraph A in the course of or in the name of from the premises of such an attorney or professional company practice, or provided that such act may not be performed, number one, in a partnership with any person other than a partner in the practice of that attorney as defined in section 1 of the Attorneys Act 1979, or number two, through the medium of or as a director of a company other than such professional company, and advertise for the purposes of this definition does not include advertising in compliance with the provisions of any other law. Prescribed means prescribed by regulations. Property means an immovable property and any interest, rights, or duties associated with it as contemplated in subsection 2. Records means any recorded information regardless of form or media. Registration certificate means a registration certificate is contemplated in section 47, subsection 2. This act includes any regulations made under this act. And trust monies means money entrusted to a property practitioner in his or her capacity as a property practitioner. Money collected or received by the property practitioner and payable in respect of or on account of any act referred to in subparagraph Roman figure 1, 2, 3, and 4 of paragraph A of the definition of a property practitioner. C, any other money including insurance premiums collected or received by a property practitioner and payable in respect of any involved property, business undertaking, or contract for the building or erection of any improvements on involved property.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ngwenya. Chapter 1, subsection 1, definition. Are we here? Okay.
Thank you, Chair. We are going to subsection 2 on page 8, application of Act. This Act applies to the marketing, promotion, managing, sale, letting, financing, and purchase of immoral property, and to any rights, obligations, interests, duties, or powers associated with or relevant to such property.
Subsection 2 of Chapter 1, the application of the Act. Are we happy? Okay.
Objects of the Act, clause number 3. The objects of the Act are A, provide for the regulation of the property practitioners, provide for the establishment of the authority, C, provide for the powers, functions, and governance of the authority, D, provide for the protection, promotion of the interests of consumers, E, provide for a dispute resolution mechanism in the property market, F, provide for education, training, development of property practitioners and candidate property practitioners, G, provide for the framework for the licensing of property practitioners, H, provide for a just, equitable legal framework for the marketing, managing, financing, letting, renting, sale, and purchase of property. I, promote meaningful participation of historically disadvantaged individuals and small, micro, medium enterprises in the property market. J, provide for the transformation of the property market to address the distortion, especially in the secondary property market. Page number 9. K, provide for the transformation of the property market that facilitates property ownership to most South Africans through structural intervention and the creation of the property consumer ownership program in an affordable and secondary market. And L, create a mechanism for responding and implementation of directives received from the minister from time to time.
Subsection 3, object of the Act. From A to L.
Yes, Honorable. Chair, can I check? sorry. Shouldn't there be a point that provides for the establishment of a transformation fund? Just probably I might have missed it, but I'm saying, remember, we're establishing a transformation fund as well, and therefore, shouldn't it be part of what is provided for in terms of the objects of the Act?
Comment? Yes, Honorable.
Thank you, Chair. On the object that we are raising here, on J, there is a provision that makes for the mechanism for the transformation. Initially, it says to provide for the transformation of the property market, to address the distortion, especially in the secondary property market. For me, Chair, what I was trying to address was to address that in the chapter itself, there will be those mechanisms, you know, that is going to provide for that particular issue that, you know, the honourable member is raising, and in particular to address the distortion. The transformation fund is mandated to address this particular distortion, but if the members of the view that it should be inserted, then we'll abide, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ngwenya. J talked about the to provide for the transformation of the property sector, which then would include anything else that has to do with transformation. But if members wanted to be specified, to be specific, let's see it.
Well, I'm on a different.
Oh, okay.
I'm on a different point.
No, let's finish this one. I'll come back to you. Yes, Honorable Bach.
No, Cheverson, why I'm raising this point is that, you see, I don't think that when we do this particular exercise, we want to leave something to interpretation. That's something that would be subject to interpretation. I would have thought that we would have a specific reference to the establishment of a transformation fund. Because remember, I think that to specify it would then clearly indicate that there is a mechanism or a vehicle that is going to take us through to transformation of the sector, as it were, and that then the establishment of this transformation fund, for me, I feel that it should be specified and be a point of on its own. But I'm saying for me, that's my viewpoint, Chair, on this particular matter.
Okay, Honorable Baha. Even when you read J with K, you still convinced that we should do that because K says provide for the transformation of the property market that facilitates property ownership to most South Africans through structured intervention. You still need to think that it has to stand alone.
I think so, Chair.
Okay. Can I hear other comments? Honorable Romano?
Whilst I agree with the sentiment that Honorable Baha is presenting, when I first was to chapter 4, which resonates with Jay, that deals with transformation, it is explicit in the chapter under 80 that deals with the transformation of property sector, and where it specifically says there will be a fund that is going to be established within a specific time, within 6 months, of 21 days. So it is explicit in that term. Perhaps at that stage when we come to that point, we also could have been.
Honorable
Mother,
I jumped you because you
have
said you are coming on another
one.
That's why.
That other point was point K, the clause on K. Because basically, Chair, I mean, J and K are actually repetitive of the nature of the intervention and the purpose of the object. So for me, what becomes key is in the phrases, you know, with J, if, you know, we were to consider what Honorable Baha is saying, is basically to illustrate that, I mean, something along the lines that provide for the transformation of property might get through intervention such as the transformation fund.
Yeah.
And then that clause K then becomes redundant because, you know, the purpose of K is for the transformation of the sector, and that is broken down as we go into the process. Because the object don't become a clause by clause interpretation, it becomes an overarching goal.
Then I'll be fine with that. But I want transformation fund there. Yes.
How it comes in, it must be
there. Yes. Remember, Chair, South Africans are learned people.
Mm.
And that's now general. They are able to manipulate anything that comes their way. And without specifics in the legislation, we'll go to Constitutional Court for interpretation of this act and we'll lose.
You hear then, they are saying,
yes,
if you can just say provide for the transformation of the property market through the formation of the transformation, establishment of the transformation. Yes. Are we happy with that?
Yes.
Yeah, we'll cover.
And then can we look at K at some point? Okay. Okay. With those amendments, then, are we happy with the object of?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Proceed, question.
Thank you very much, sir. Clause 4 on page 9, exemption from X. Clause 4, subsection 1, provides that any person herein after referred to as the applicant may, subject to the provisions of this section, be exempted from the compliance with any specific provisions of this Act. Subsection 2. The applicant must, in the prescribed manner and form, submit the application for exemption to the authority accompanied by A, an explanation of the reasons for the application, and B, any applicable supporting documents. Subsection 3, the authority may direct the applicant to A, furnish additional information which may be relevant, and B, appear in person before the authority to support his or her application and provide verbal responses to questions raised by the authority. Subsection 4, any person may raise an objection to the authority as prescribed regarding the exemption which has been granted to a person or an entity in terms of this section. B, the authority must consider the objection and determine whether such objection may be sustained. Clause 5, the authority must consider and decide on the application taking into account whether A, the granting of the exemption is likely to impact negatively on the interest of the general public, B, the granting of the exemption is likely to impact negatively on the competition in the property sector or the property practitioners industry, C, the granting of the exemption is likely to benefit one sector of the property practitioners industry to the detriment of another, D, appropriate, sufficient, effective regulatory protection of consumers' rights and interests exist, and E, the exemption will not defeat the object of the Act. 6, the authority may A, approve the application together with a record of the measure contemplated in subsection 7, provided that the exemption may not exceed 3 years and may not be applied retrospectively. B, the authority may decline the application. C, the authority may refer the application back to the applicant for further investigation or consideration as the case may be. Clause 7, if the authority approves the application, the authority must publish the decision on its website, which must include A, the provision of the Act from which exemption is granted, B, the person to whom the exemption applies, C, the date from which and the date upon to when the exemption applies, D, any conditions that apply to the exemption, E, the reasons for granting the exemption, F, a declaration that the granting of an exemption does not create any special rights or legitimate interest which may apply to the category of persons so exempted, and G, a declaration that any exemption granted may be amended or withdrawn subject to the provisions of this section. Number 8, any person who is adversely affected by the decision of the authority may request the authority to provide written reasons. 9, any person may, at any time in writing, request the minister to review any exemption granted in terms of this section. B, the minister must instruct the person requesting the review to notify the authority as well as any other person specified by the minister for the account of the person requesting that review and to submit any comments received to the minister. 10, the authority may, on good grounds, amend, suspend, or withdraw an exemption. 11, the authority must publish the exemption on its website. Thank you.
Exemption
M.
Check. I'm trying to reconcile section 6 with 9 and 10, particularly with regards to the exemption. One, to establish, you know, why the need for the 3-year reference. And secondly, to say, I mean, would it not be far more proactive to leave the change, or, you know, in the status of the exemption to when facts change? Because, you know, I mean, if it changes within that period, then what happens? You know, is the 3-year period the maximum period? Is it the minimum period? But what happens during that time frame? Whereas, I mean, facts change over time, and ultimately that decision is with the authority. So why don't we just make provision for that, so that it's not a cumbersome process again.
Can we clarify the trends in terms of the exemption provided that the exemption may not be used? Can you clarify? Yeah, Mr. Shadi?
Yeah, Chair, we thought the 3 years is a reasonable period to be able to cater for the concerns that's raised by the Honourable Member. Otherwise, if you just say effect changes, it might be very open-ended. So we thought the 3 years will provide the institution with the ability to be able to monitor the exemptions within a particular period. And of course, the maximum period is 3 years within which, you know, we can monitor the exemptions that have been granted.
In other words, the exemption may not exceed
3 years.
Yes. Okay. So it can be 1 year, 2 years.
Yes. Yes. Depending on the circumstances.
Depending on the circumstances.
Yes.
Honourable Madam, you understand the 3 years, but it may not exist.
Yeah. Then I think, Chair, just on a technicality, the language must also speak to the subject. You know, something to link it to that time period, because a different, you know, expedient interpretation might be different. You know, because I'm looking at it as there's a gap here that I can take up, and I'm not even a legal expert.
Any other takers? No comment. The legal people will look at that. I don't think it's a major issue. Because all that Honourable Madam was saying is that it must not be up for exploitation or different interpretation. That's all that is. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. On page 10, clause number 5, establishment of the property practitioner regulatory authority. Clause number 5, subsection 1. There is hereby established a juristic person to be known as the Property Practitioners Regulatory Authority. Subsection 2, the authority is a national public entity subject to the Public Finance Management Act, 1999, Act number 1 of 1999. Subsection 3, the authority is governed and acts through the board known as the Board of the Authority. 4, the authority must provide a regulatory mechanisms in respect of the financing, marketing, managing, lending, hiring, sale, property, consumer education, and purchase of property, and may do all that is necessary or expedient to achieve the objects of this act. 5, the authority is accountable to the minister. Clause number 6, function of authority. The function of the authority are to A, regulate the conduct of property practitioners in dealing with the consumers, B, regulate the conduct of property practitioners insofar as marketing, managing, financing, letting, renting, hiring, sale, and purchase of property are concerned, C, regulate and ensure that there is a compliance with the provisions of this act, D, ensure that the consumers are protected from undesirable and sanctionable practices as set out in section 62 and section 63. E, regulate any other conduct which falls within the ambit of the act insofar as property practitioners and consumers in this market are concerned. F, provide for the education, training and development of property practitioners and candidate property practitioners. G, educate and inform consumers about their rights as set out in section 69. And H, implement measures to ensure that the property practitioner is transformed as set out in chapter 4.
Subsection 6, functions of the authority. I think we find, particularly with F, I know that
Honorable Saha would have jumped with that term on the education and training and development. So we try to use this. So I know. We get to that. So chapter one, we overall we are happy and with the two amendments. That is spoken to the transformation fund and the 3 year otherwise besides that we have with chapter one. Can I see an argument on that?
No.
Thank you so much. Can you proceed to chapter two?
The English is still on page 10. Now dealing with chapter two, the board of authority. For 7, deal with the composition and appointment of board. 7, subsection 1, the board consists of A, not less than 9 but not more than 12 non-executive members, including chairperson appointed by the minister, and B, the CEO who serves on the board by virtue of his or her office. Subsection 2, the board consists of the total number of the board members contemplating subsection 1A must consist of A, a combination of the following skills and competencies. I mean, 1, sufficient financial expertise. 2, relevant legal experience. I mean, 3, sufficient experience as a property practitioner. 4, sufficient experience in rural and land reform, the promotion and protection of consumer interest. 5, sufficient experience in property management and financing, and B, at least one member nominated by the Minister of Trade and Industry in consultation with the Minister, and one member nominated by the Minister of Public Works in consultation with the Minister. Subsection 3, the Minister must, prior to the appointment of members of the board, as contemplated in subsection 1A, or filling of vacancy, issue an invitation in the Gazette and at least 2 newspapers circulating nationally in the Republic for the nomination of persons meeting the requirements to serve on the board. B, a member of the board contemplating subsection 1A who is not a public servant or in a full-time employee of the state may be paid out of the funds of the authority the remuneration and allowances that may be determined generally or in any particular case by the minister in concurrence with the Minister of Finance. Page 11, subsection 4, the minister must ensure that A, the appointed members of the board is governed by the overriding principle of selection based on merit determined by an assessment of 1, the object, functions and operations of the authority, 2, the competencies collectively required for serving on the board, including the relevant skills, expertise and experience relating to governing of organs of state having regard to subsection 2, and 3, the qualification, skills, expertise and experience of each individual prospective candidate. B, the board is broadly representative with regards to race, gender, disability, and disability. And C, the majority of persons serving on the board are not public servants contemplated in Section 8 of the Public Service Act, 1994, Proclamation No. 103 of 1994. Subsection 5, when the chairperson of the board is absent from a meeting of the board, the remaining members must nominate one of them to act as chairperson of that meeting. Or B, vacate his or her office, the minister must within 3 months appoint the chairperson in accordance with subsection 3. 6, a non-executive member of the board hold office for a period of 3 years. 7, a member of the board who is upon completion of his or her 3-year term of office eligible for reappointment, but a non-member may serve more than 2 consecutive term of office. And B, the minister may not reappoint more than 5 members of the same board.
Chapter 2, subsection 7, board of composition of the board. I know Honorable Stolle is quite comfortable because four covers exactly what he meant to you.
Thanks, Chair. On that particular point, point number four, I think as is, it reads confusingly because it covers two separate components. One is the experience in rural and land reform, and the other is expertise in the promotion and protection of consumer interests. So I think the secondary part should be a standalone point on its own because it covers a different field altogether. And if my memory serves me fine, I think in terms of the nomination, we substituted the Minister of Trade and Industry with land and rural development. It wasn't the case.
It wasn't the case. That's why we have then put the experience.
Chair, just to check my understanding, the chairperson of the board is appointed by the minister, yes. And the CEO, is it common sense that we will know who appoints the CEO? Or doesn't it have to be specified as is done with the chairperson of the board? If you look at that, at the appointment of the chairperson and the following one is the CEO, shouldn't we say appointed by?
No.
No, we don't have
automatic,
to.
Automatic, yes. It's a no. That the CEO of an organization will automatically be the CEO. So it's not appointed. He's duty. Automatically amongst
these people
to sit on the board.
No. I'm not questioning sitting on the board. I'm talking about the responsibility of appointing the CEO.
It's still coming.
Oh, okay.
Yes, Honorable Kamis.
Yeah, Chair, I just want to carry you on the number. Because you said 1.8, not less than 9, but not more than 12. But in as far as I go down listening to what you're saying, they are not even more than 9 years old. They are the chairperson and the two appointees from the ministers.
What we are trying to say is that it's agreement that you might appoint one person in ten, what is explained there. But all that you are saying is that the people that you appoint must have these expertise. It might be two of them that, for instance, they have got experience in rural development. I'm not making an example. It might be two that have got production of consumer service. But all that you are saying is that the board itself must not be less than 9 people, but not more than 12. But they must have this ability. It doesn't mean that each explanation here is one person. No, I'm not having one.
My follow-up question,
who appoints the left?
That's really, I'm just trying to do what I'm saying. But in terms of what you're saying, you're saying they should not be more than less than 9 or 12. So in case here I see 4 or 3.
That's not a that board will not be a constitutional board. If you've got 4
so
people, that board will be
a constitutional board. Who's going to appoint the other? That is where I'm living.
All of them are appointed by the ministry. You understand? I think it's important for another academic to understand. Remember what is going to happen is that there will be a selection process. And then, among the 12 of the 9 people or the 10 people that have made the cut, then the minister will appoint the chair of the board. You understand?
So the chair will come after everybody else is there. They will do the selection, appoint whether it's 11 or 12 or 9. Then among those 9 or 12 or 11 or 10, then a chair of the board will be appointed. So the chair doesn't come before the selection of the 9 or the 10. I hope it makes sense to you. Because one day you will be the chair of this board, you see. When you don't
come
there. So it's important that you understand. I'm not saying.
I'm not canvassing.
No, I'm not saying. Look, remember,
you are talking
what
about
should be
you
at the back of your mind is not to say the minister appoints the chair. Remember, the minister would appoint the 10 board members. Then from that 10 board members, a chair will be then appointed.
And that's you. Dishonorably or in a breach
of a fiduciary duty or of any other offences for which such person has been sentenced to direct imprisonment without an option of a fine, other than an offence contemplated prior to 27 April 1994, demonstrably associated with political objectives. F, whose name or the name of a juristic person of whom the person was a director, member, trustee, partner, shareholder, holder of membership or other beneficial interest has been listed by the National Treasury on its register for tender before trust established by Section 29 of the Prevention and Combating of Corrupt Activities Act 2004, Act No. 12 of 2004. G, who has been discharged from a position of trust. H, whose membership of a board or other accounting authority of a public entity as defined in Section 1 of the Public Finance Management Act 99, Act No. 1 of 1999 has been prematurely terminated due to this honorable discharge. I, who has at any time been found to be in contravention of this act or the Estate Agency Affairs Act. I, who is of unsound mind or who is an unrehabilitated solvent. Thank you.
This qualification from membership of the board. Am I going to start it?
Thank you, Chair. No, I understand. But what I want to understand is that, if someone was defined guilty, but she or he gets a fine, is that he's going to be allowed to be part of the board?
That's a criminal report.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to check on point, I think that's I, with regards to the disqualification of people who have at any time been found to be in contravention of the act, as to whether there is a set period for that, you know, and whether it makes space for rehabilitation, for instance, and also whether it's a blanket approach to any infringement, because the magnitude of infringement differs. So whether we have a blanket approach to it, depending on what the infringement is, and whether there's a particular time frame set up, you know, because in any environment, you know, people can rehabilitate, people can mend ways, whether we put a permanent stop on that and how then that consistency, you know, the principles of the law. Yeah, those are the two points.
If the qualifications are as they are in the other entities, but let's clarify the two questions, but also clarify the other areas that would also be explicit together when you have put together the regulation.
Thank you, Chairman. Police will respond. Number story. Primarily on E provides that of which such person has been sentenced to a direct imprisonment term without the option of a fine. It means to say that if you have not served a direct imprisonment term, but you are given an option to pay a fine, then it means to say that you cannot be excluded. That's what it means. But in here, it specifically means that if you're served, then it's something else. But if you were given an option to pay a fine, then it means to say that, like, for example, the gravity of the offense, the court has applied its mind to say that you cannot serve a guard in prison, but you'd rather have to pay a fine. It means that you can still serve on the board.
In other words,
whatever
was told,
what
was told, we can't then exclude you from this board. Port or Banga said that we are strong, but never in your name, five. I want my member. That's what I have to say. That's what you are saying.
So banga bukewa because already unera record. Loko ba so that's what it is. The second part of Honorable Malasin.
Yeah, Chair, the declaration of insolvency is done in terms of the insolvency, yes? And there is a period that is given, I think it's 5 or 10 years, and after that you undergo a process of being rehabilitated, and if you are a rehabilitated insolvent, you can become a board member. Thank you.
Okay. Can we proceed?
One thing that I want to touch on. If you are a state employee, when we are talking about remuneration in another part, civil servant will touch.
Yeah.
But as far as exemption is concerned, what we do, employees who are directly employed by the department.
Where are you now? Because we are dealing with disqualification. Disqualification. Are we, is that where you are? Which clause? Don't confuse me now.
No, any clause.
Come back again and try to explain to me.
No, where they are saying, basically they are saying politicians. Who is a member of parliament, a member of provincial legislation, a member of what the mayor, the municipal council, and not much is said about employees that went for a
the employees of the state were not in terms of that as well. In terms of that,
public service and is explicit on civil servants. That's why it's not in the end.
So Chair, you have the last one. So does it mean then there's a contradiction with the mention of the civil servant in another talk that you have?
No. Only about the question was saying
if a nomination, remember, there are certain departments that need to nominate. A minister may nominate a particular official in the department. What we're making reference that particular official will not be subject to, will not be entitled to remuneration because he's employed to serve in the public service sector. So if the minister nominates me to go and serve in another port, it means to say that I cannot expect to be remunerated by the particular sector.
If the person
nominated
from trade industry to come and stay in the report, we're not going to be paid. That's what we're saying. Okay. All right. Thank you,
Chair. On page 12, powers and duties of board. Clause number 9, the functions of the board are two. They need to ensure that the authority complies with this act and any other applicable law. B, ensure that the authority performs its duties efficiently and effectively. C, provides corporate governance for the authority. D, determine and enforce the broad policy framework within which the authority must pursue its object and perform its functions. E, ensure that the authority exercises its powers in accordance with the principle of transparency and accountability. F, manage the marketing, promotion, sale, lease, financing, purchasing, registration and transfer of property of the authority. G, advise the minister on Roman 1, the efficacy of this act, 2, the state of transformation of the industry, Roman figure 3, prescribing of regulations, 4, education and training of property practitioners, and 5, any other matters of which the minister requires the advice of the board. H, the function of the board are to maintain the funds and hold it in trust. And the function of the board also is to perform any other powers or duty conferred on the board by this act or any other applicable law. Thank you, Chair.
Powers and duties of the board.
Are we happy? Okay.
Still on page 12, checklist number 10, dealing with the good governance and code of ethics. The board must, under subsection 1, approve code of ethics applicable to all members of the board and employees of the authority, respectively, and B, from time to time, review those codes to ensure compliance with all current law, principles of good governance and ethical behavior. Subsection 2, nothing in this section prevents the board from voluntarily adopting any code, protocol, charter not in conflict with any policy code, protocol, guidelines, or similar documents contemplated in Subsection 1 and applicable to its members.
Are we happy there? Good governance and code of ethics?
I just want to check, Chair, in terms of the code of ethics, as to whether consideration has been made to the involvement of the broader industry, because at the end of the day, it's going to affect, you know, them, and whether isn't there room for space in terms of the level of engagement, because any democratic process would want to have, you know, the involvement or at least to have an opportunity of engagement with the sector, so that it's an inclusive process.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I think the very important point that you've raised, the code of conduct, you know, of members. Normally, you know, it's an open process that is, you know, subjected, you know, to that engagement, you know, with the sector itself, and including any other interested party, you know, in the property line.
Okay.
Okay.
Any questions?
Thank you, Chair. The same page 12, conflict of interest of members of board. Clause 11, a member of the board must, upon appointment, submit a declaration to the minister made under oath or by affirmation to the effect that he or she is not disqualified from appointment as contemplated in section 8. Subsection 2, a member of the board or of a committee of the board, as the case may be, but immediately when he or she becomes aware of any conflict of interest, in writing informs the chairperson of the board or the chairperson of a board committee, as the case may be, of such conflict, and the relevant chairperson must immediately excuse that member from participating and voting in any part of a meeting or proceedings where the matter that has caused such a conflict is considered. Subsection 3, the chairperson of the board or of a committee of the board must immediately, when he or she becomes aware of any conflict of interest, in writing inform the board or the board committee of such conflict, and the chairperson must recuse himself or herself from participating and voting in any part of the meeting or proceedings where the matter that has caused such a conflict is considered. Thank you, Chair.
Conflict of interest of the board. Yes,
Chair, my only concern with this is it's in a way voluntary. So if I, you know, feel conflicted, will depend on my good faith to express that conflict. But the interpretation, I mean, there might be a good case which would lie on other people highlighting that. And I think to leave it to the good faith of the board member is too optimistic in my view. So shouldn't there be a mechanism where a suspicion of conflict of interest, when concerns the chairperson, for instance, it can be ventilated elsewhere so that we can establish whether one is legitimate to require a recusal of the chairperson, than to leave it entirely up to the chairperson to withdraw themselves from that process should they be allegedly in conflict of interest.
Okay. And also, I think let's read it in conjunction with subsection 8, which talks about the qualification for membership of the board. Because remember, subsection 8 explains exactly who should not be a member.
And then, what then happens in subsection E11, you yourself must sign that form that says you are not contributing. I hear what you are saying, and I'm just saying, at the same time, there were explanations that you were saying who should not be a member of the board. And I understand that, but they will come in and then you can come in.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think the point of this is very important. But from the drafting point of view, if you have a look, you find the must expression in this chapter. It means to say that a member of the board must, upon appointment, it's not discretionary, it's must. Then we go to the chairperson subsection 3. It also means that the chairperson of the board or the committee of the board must immediately, when he will become aware, then it's a must provision that it's a must for them to be true. It's not even a may. It's a must that upon becoming aware, they must do that. If you look at subsection 1, Chair, we're using a must today. Subsection 3, there is a must as well. Into expression that provides whatever.
So it's combined. Another
problem. Chair, it was, I mean, perhaps I didn't articulate my point much better. Because this is in relation to the dealing of the business of the board. So there could be an issue that emerges on the daily practice, not in terms of what disqualifies them from being part of the board. In the normal day-to-day conducting of their business, there might be areas of conflict of interest that arise that may involve the chairperson. And that's where I'm referring to that element, that it would seem that it's voluntary on the issue that might be on the table at the time. So what is other avenue in the event that there is a failure to act in good faith consistent with this process?
My learned friend, yes, Mr. Shadi.
Yeah.
I remember, Honorable Chair, Honorable Member, we are prescribing a code of ethics in terms of section 910.
Yes.
And the Code of Ethics will deal with all matters, including the management of conflict within an institution. So it will also set out the measures and processes of declaring interest within the organization. And the consequences thereof will be included in that Code of Ethics.
I hope you are covered, Honorable Manas. In subsection 10, where they talk about the code of ethics, this is what they are talking about now in 11, which has been explained in detail when they are drafting the code of ethics. And the consequence thereof. Ethics?
Yeah, I think there's a vacuum here because we don't have access to what the code of ethics says and stipulate the steps. So it is, again, to be optimistic and put trust into that process.
I think it must also be clarified when you deal with the resolution. Can we agree on that? When I think what's going on with Malaysia is that it's a very important question.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Chair. Still on page 12, subsection, no, clause number 12, termination of membership of board. Clause number 1, 12, subsection 1, the Minister may, after having afforded a member of the board a reasonable opportunity to make submission in writing, terminate that member's membership of the board if that member has A, failed to immediately declare any conflict of interest as contemplated in Section 11. That conflict of interest. Then repeatedly and knowingly disregarded or contravened any code of ethics contemplated in Section 10 or any other applicable law. 3. C. Fail to attend 3 consecutive meetings of the board or board committees without the permission of the chairperson or of the board or the chairpersons of the relevant board committees. 13. Subsection 2. The minister must, when terminating the membership of a member of the board, in writing inform that board member and that member of the reasons for that termination. Subsection 3. If a member of the board at any time during his or her term of office becomes disqualified to be a board member on any of the grounds contemplated in Section 8 that member must A, must immediately in writing inform the minister and the chairperson of the board of that disqualification, and once the minister has been so informed, he or she must forthwith in writing remove that member from the board, and B, may not attend a board meeting or a board committee meeting from the time he or she has so become disqualified until he or she is removed by the minister. Subsection 4, a member of the board may resign by giving 1 month notice in writing to the minister. Subsection 5, the termination of membership of the board or resignation from the board does not in any way prevent or influence the institution or continuation of proceedings against the person whose membership of the board was terminated or who resigned from the board, as the case may be.
Thank you. Termination of membership. I'm sure Honorable Malachi, at least there is some degree of comfort on 12.1A, where at least it's very clear now that if it is not immediately declared as the subsection 11, your membership of the board member is terminated. Are we comfortable? Thank you,
Chair. On page 13, meetings of the board. For 13, the board must meet at least once in every 3 months. Subsection 2, the chairperson or board must forthwith call a special meeting of the board if the requested in writing to do so by at least 3 members of the board. 3, a majority of members of the board constitute a quorum for a meeting of the board. Subsection 4, the chairperson has a casting vote only. Subsection 5, any minutes of a meeting or decision signed by the chairperson of the meeting or by the chairperson of the next meeting of the board, as the case may be, is evidence of the proceedings of that meeting or adoption of that decision, as the case may be. 6, a meeting of the board may be conducted by electronic communication, and individual board members may participate in a meeting by electronic communication if the board so approves, but the electronic communication facility employed must enable all persons participating in the meeting to communicate concurrently with each other without an intermediary and to participate effectively in the meeting. 7, the board must, in addition to this section, adopt a chapter setting out its rules of operations in line with applicable King 3 report. 8, the board determines its own procedures at the meetings of the board. Thank you, Chair.
Meetings of the board, straightforward. Yes, Honorable Stoller.
No, Chairperson, I'm sorry, because I checked the page 13 under 2, when it says the minister must, when terminating the membership of the member of the board.
We are in the meetings of the board, Honorable
Stoller. No, that's why I am late. But it's only one thing that I want to
comment.
The minister must, when terminating the membership of the board of the member of the board, in writing inform both the board and that member of the reason.
I'm trying to check this of the reason.
Well, there, what it says, Trump, is that here is no power going to be discharged from the board. Now, what that sentence says is that the minister must write to me to say you are discharged from being a member of the board because of A, B, C. You know, that has been, you have been disqualified for. But then the same letter must go to the board itself. So, ubhalelwa mna, mntu, who disqualifyayo, okanye terminatewayo, ubhalelwe the board. Who explain the reason. Now, ubhalelwa mntu nje. Because you have failed to declare in the Bakufan's work, we are tenderisha up on the board. So therefore, we are disqualifying you or terminating your membership.
So the reason must be explained. If I would say 6.5 and the point, that reason should be whenever we are enough to explain them, but the body itself is hysterical enough. That's what it's saying. Yeah, Baka.
Chair, I understand, but my question is off the region, so should be that member informed both the board and that member the region, not off the region. I'm trying to check this off the region. Then off.
Oh, we're off with it. When I was saying I'm off.
Period not exceeding 5 years.
Subsection 2, the CEO is accountable to the board and is responsible and accountable for the day-to-day management and operations of the authority. Subsection 3, the board must, prior to the appointment of the CEO, certify itself that the person whom it intends to appoint has a suitable combination of qualifications, skills, and experience to lead and manage the authority. Subsection 4, the appointment of the CEO is subject to the conclusion of written performance contract entered into between the CEO and the board within 3 months of the appointment of the CEO. Subsection 5, the CEO and any company in which he or she is a director may not trade with the authority within 12 months after termination of his or her employment by or resignation from the authority. 6, the CEO may be reappointed after the expiration of his or her term of office for one additional term of 5 years. 7, the CEO may resign by giving 3 months notice in writing to the board unless the parties agreed on a shorter period. Subsection 8, upon resignation or removal of the CEO, the board must, as soon as possible, appoint a new CEO or another suitable person as acting CEO on the terms and conditions determined by the board until the new CEO is appointed. Clause 9, subsection 9, if the board has not appointed a new CEO within 6 months after the position of the CEO became vacant, the board must, within 14 days after the expiry of that 6 month period, report to the minister the reasons why it has not done so. Subsection 10, the termination of the CEO's employment contract or the CEO resignation does not in any way prevent or influence the institution or continuance of legal or disciplinary proceedings against him or her.
Appointment of the CEO. Any issue there?
That first sentence, one, the board must, with the approval of the minister. I know the honorable member was fighting about the oath, I'm fighting about the approval. Does it mean that if the minister does not give this approval, the board cannot approve?
Mm-hmm.
Good question, sir.
No. And if that is the case, then there's a number of...
No, but remember, before you go back, the board would, after they have done their selection, would interview the candidate and say, you know, Bawe qualifies to be the CEO. Before they then appoint, they have to say, here is the person, here is the candidate that we have seen. So, like, I don't know whether they have approval, but I know that they have to go and give a report before they are going. But let's hear the legal mind. Yes, Honorable Madam.
Chair, on that particular point, just to jump on Honorable Dolman's point, I think my curiosity lies in the instance where there is lack of agreement in between the recommended candidate and the minister's position. So there is an impasse. What happens?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's now a futuristic approach or the deal. But yeah, anyway. Can I hear your comment?
Sure, there's no specific reasons, but is the reasoning that there is a normal corporate governance practice, you know, for each and every entity to say that if the entity is reporting to a particular minister, that particular minister must be taken into confidence as to the recommended candidate, you know, that has been put forth actually, you know, to the board. But in practice, normally what the board does, they will shortlist and recommend about 3 names or 4 names to the minister, and including the detailed report in terms of the selection process, the interviewing process, and the screening process. So you are right in the sense that if the minister proposes a different candidate, you know, it might be, you know, having that particular issue, you're correct. But generally, it has been just a normal practice shared. there was no substantive reasons for it. But if you agree with that, and then...
And it happens in all departments, in the power department, in all entities, and unfortunately.
Yeah.
So we hear what you are saying, and we understand your concern, but this is a standard procedure that is happening across the
commission. Is that standard approach to dealing with the word approval or in consultation?
Approval.
It might have some other connotations that I was not... The board interview, we are reporting to the board, as we say, but the part of the minister approved me, my people, I think, small knowledge. The rest in consultation.
That's why you, I don't know if you know, that's why in some entities there will always be a long time waiting for the minister to come back to the board to say that they all can be appointed, because that's what it happens. The board would do this, and then they would then send to the minister. And in some areas, even a cluster, if you know, and others, they would then wait for the minister to come there to say, we are hosted. It's just how it is done. It's never happened to say something. But we can use consultation if we want, but why it is, unfortunately, the minister held to according to the practice.
I actually concur with what you were saying, but what I understand is that with the approval of the minister, what it means is that without the approval, as you have indicated, then it won't take place. And in the instance of a statement, it means the minister must definitely go ahead, and if there isn't, then that's where the problem arrives. But if we again go for in consultation takes us back to a position that if at all they never have their minds meeting, then there won't be the appointment. Whereas in this instance, the party has to stop with the minister and says, we have to pass by the minister.
Just so you know, even before the minister actually approves, she has to go and present to the cabinet, the candidate. And then the cabinet, but it's not detailed here, but that's how it works. And then the cabinet will then say, approve the report and then come. So it's a longer process. That's why it's changed with the approval. Okay. So not unless you want to change the best practices that the government is. That's how it is. Honorable Pastor.
Thank you, Chair. I'll move from this point, Agavo, because I know he's not satisfied, but it's fine. There's nothing he can do about it. Chair, on 8, I'm not sure whether, you know, I want more detail and stuff, but in once the position is declared vacant, shouldn't be a time frame that says someone must act in that position within a given time. I see the 6 months down, that says if there was no appointment within 6 months, the board must then go account to the minister and stuff. But I'm saying, if the CEO resigns today, or effectively, if I leave today, what is the time frame?
I asked in your place immediately, tomorrow.
Here it says as soon as possible, and legally, what is as soon as possible? How do you measure that?
Because as soon as I vacate the position, the board appoints somebody to act. But within 6 months, then somebody must have been appointed. But probably how drafted yet is what Honorable Papa is talking about. Obviously, there is somebody acting. Probably you assume that it's general knowledge, but probably you have to say.
No, I think we're not going to reach a very valid point. In the sense that if there is an acting, as soon as possible, it will be subject to different interpretations.
Yes.
Like, it can be a reasonable period, it can be 3 months, but I think you understand why you are saying that with the appointment of the vacancy, why are we saying 6 months? But with regard to the acting, we are saying as soon as possible.
Okay.
But
can you look at the draft?
Yeah, we'll find that you have a reasonable period, actually.
Yes.
It can be within a month or within
Thank you, Chair.
Talk to me if you want to say something. Are you okay? Any other
views? You just said that we should qualify. That even in an acting position, we need to qualify. You have done with a vacant. And within 6 months, you must appoint. If now there is a vacancy, you know, you can't say as soon as possible, but you must find yourself out.
The normal practice is that obviously if somebody resigns today, you appoint somebody else, isn't it? Within 24 hours, isn't it? So I think that's what the committee says, that just try and be more specific on that thing. I think the whole point is that it's very quiet. But obviously immediately you appoint somebody to next. Immediately.
Yes, another problem.
But if you think that we're trying to be very detailed in the draft, you must say so and say how then you deal with it in other fields. Because look, remember we are not expecting this in 20 years. So you must then guide us and say this is how we normally do it, or this is how it's normally drafted, or this is or it will be catered for in the regulation. But Tina, we will ask questions. And then you must be able to just give us clarity. Yes, Mr. Hon.
These are the words that are usually used. It's just an expression, because if you say immediately, immediately means now. So the problem is, to your point, there must be certain paperwork and certain action, so that as soon as those things are done, as soon as possible, the appointment is made. If you say 24 hours, I suppose it will also work, but immediately will be problematic.
So as soon as possible is used in any other legislation. That's what you are saying. This is the standard.
Okay.
Honourable Chairperson, I'm just checking if the person is appointed to act for 6 months, and then say the minister or the board fails to appoint within 6 months. What does it mean? Does it mean the person who has been appointed to act within 6 months? I mean, that extension of time for until the appointment is done, or there's going to be a meeting of the board to say that they appoint the person, because automatically an extension is if the board fails within that 6 months.
I think, Honorable President, if you read the sentence, it says the board must as soon as possible appoint a new CEO or another suitable person as acting CEO on the terms and conditions determined by the board. On the terms and conditions determined by the board until a new CEO is appointed. So that
is explaining it enough to say there would be terms and conditions, but then we would guide you one that you have until one. Another
from
that. That point is coming. Thank you, Chair. On the same page, clause 17, staff of authority. Objection 1, the CEO must appoint suitably qualified persons to assist the CEO to efficiently and effectively perform his or her functions under this Act in accordance with an employment policy approved by the board. Section 2, the CEO must ensure that all employees of the authority are adequately qualified and trained for their respective positions. Clause 3, the Code of Ethics for Employees of the Authority contemplated in Section 10.1 applies to all employees of the authority to the extent indicated in the code.
Just the issue of staff there. I don't think there's anything
of it. Clause 18, conflict of interest of employees. An employee of the authority must, on appointment, submit to the CEO a statement in writing in which that person declares whether or not he or she has any direct or indirect interest, financial or otherwise, which A, may constitute a conflict of interest in respect of his or her functions as a member of the staff of the authority, or B, could reasonably be expected to compromise the authority in the performance of its function. section 2, if an employee of the authority acquires an interest contemplated in subsection 1, he or she must immediately in writing declare that facts to the CEO. Subsection 3, an employee of the authority may not be present at or take part in the discussion or taking of the decision of any matters before the authority in which that member has an interest contemplated in subsection 1. 4, an employee of the authority may not use his or a position or privileges or confidential information obtained as a member of staff of the authority for personal gain or improperly benefit another person. 5, the authority must institute disciplinary proceedings against any employee of the authority who fails or refuses to comply with or contravene subsection 1, 2, 3, or 4 in accordance with applicable employment and labor law. On page 15, subsection C, the authority must keep a register of the interest of members of the staff disclosed in terms of subsection 1 and 2 and must update the data register every 3 months.
Conflict of interest? Any comment to that? Okay. Before Ms. Ngonya proceeds, Ms. Ngonya has to leave briefly because the other committee needs some legal advice, sports and recreation. So she's going to be back. Continue.
Thank you, Chair. On page 15, clause number 19, delegation. The CEO may, in writing, delegate any of his or her functions or powers to any of the staff members of the authority subject to any qualifications he or she may determine. Subsection 2, the delegation of any functions or powers under subsection 1 does not preclude the CEO from exercising such functions or powers. 3, the CEO remains responsible and accountable for all acts and omissions in terms of or under such a delegation. 4, the CEO may in writing revoke any delegation under subsection 1. 5, the CEO must maintain a register of all delegations under subsection 1.
Delegation. Are we clear?
Yeah.
Okay. Before we get to chapter 4, 5 minutes for the break.
Oh, boss.
On your right?
Shabule. No. Shabule.
I'm going to go to the next one.
Transformation Fund.
Verse 21, the authority must, within 6 months of its establishment, open a property sector transformation fund into which grants contemplated in Section 38 are paid. 2, the minister may prescribe measures to promote economic transformation by facilitating the accessibility of finance for property ownership, property development, and investment in order to enable meaningful participation of the historically disadvantaged individuals, including women, youth, and people with disabilities. Concession 3, the authority must utilize the property sector transformation fund in such a manner as may be prescribed, which may include the following transformation and empowerment programs. A, municipalization program to promote black-owned firms and principals. B, regularization program to promote and encourage participation of historical disadvantage due to non-compliance. C, consumer awareness program to promote awareness of property transactions and business undertakings. D, work readiness program to promote and enhance participation of the historical disadvantage in the property sector. C, 4, subsection 4, the authority must, in consultation with the services sector, develop special dispensation for the training and development of historical disadvantage, which must include recognition of prior learning.
Property sector transformation plan? Happy? Okay.
Property sector research center. 22, the property sector research center is hereby established. 16, the property sector research center must conduct market research in partnership with the National Research Foundation and institutions of higher learning. Clause 3, the property research sector research center must A, be able to increase the national scientific research and innovation capability through the development of human capacity and stimulating the generation of the new knowledge in the property sector. B, be the central repository of expert knowledge on predetermined areas of the transformation of the property sector in South Africa. And C, support the realization of South Africa's transformation in knowledge-based economy in which generation of knowledge translates into socio-economic benefit. Subsection 4, the property sector research agenda must prioritize the following: identification of barriers to entry and meaningful participation in the property sector by historically disadvantaged individuals. B, demographic distribution of skills that determines resilience in the property sector. C, an inclusive, accessible and transformatory curriculum developed and enhancement in the technical and vocational education and training and higher education sector in South Africa. D, systematic patterns of discriminatory behavior in the property development and management value chain. E, efficiency of compliance, monetary and enforcement mechanism to advance the transformation of the property sector. F, the rural-urban dynamics in property sector growth and transformation. G, the contribution of the property sector in urban spatial transformation and economy. Subsection 5, the property sector research center must annually promote consumer awareness and education, which must include the education of consumers on their rights and responsibilities in respect of property ownership and development. B, all empowerment programs of the authority. And lastly, C, the consumer protection and lodging of claims.
Subsection 22. We get it there? Okay. Proceed.
Clause number 25, exemption in respect of accounting records and trust accounts. Clause number 23, a property practitioner whose turnover is below 2.5 million must cause his or her or its accounting records to be subjected to an independent review by a registered accountant according to the provision of section 54(1)-7 applies with the necessary changes. 2, the minister may by notice in the Gazette determine the circumstances under which certain property petition may be exempted from keeping trust accounts. And B, the minister may by notice in the Gazette determine a different dispensation for the review of accounting records for those property practitioners.
Exemption. Subsection 25. We have it. That means chapter 4. Everybody is happy. Okay, proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Chapter 5, compliance and enforcement, appointment of inspectors. 24, the CEO must appoint any suitably qualified person as an inspector. And he must issue each inspector with a certificate in a prescribed form stating that the person has been appointed as an inspector in terms of his act, and with the inspector's identification card. Clause 2, when the inspector performs his or her function in terms of this section, the inspector must be in possession of a certificate of appointment or an inspector identification card issued to that inspector in terms of subsection 1B. B, immediately show that the certificate or inspector's identification card to any person who, Roman 1, is affected by the inspector's action in terms of this act, or request to see the certificate or inspector's identification card, and C, have the powers of a peace officer as defined in section 1 of the Criminal Procedure Act 1977, Act number 1 of 1977, and may exercise the powers conferred on a peace officer by law.
By law. Okay. Subsection 24, appointment of inspector. No issue there.
25, Chair, powers of inspectors to enter, inspect, search and seize. 25, an inspector may at any reasonable time and without prior notice conduct an inspection to determine whether the provisions of this act have been or have been complied with, and for that purpose may without a search warrant enter and inspect any business premises except a private residence of a property practitioner. B, require a property practitioner, manager, employee, or agent of that property practitioner to, number one, produce to him or her the participant certificate of that property practitioner. Number two, produce to him or her any book, records, or other document related to the inspection or in the possession in the possession or under the control of that property practitioner, manager, employee, or agent. Three, furnish him or her with such information with respect of the validity fund certificate, book, records, or other document at such a place and in such a manner as the inspector may determine. And C, examine or make extract from or copies of any such validity fund certificate, book, records, or other documents. Subsection 2, where a property practitioner conducts his or her business at his or her private residence, the inspector must notify the property practitioner in advance and in writing before conducting the inspection in terms of subsection 1 and set out the details of the inspection. Subsection 3, the inspector may, on authority of a search warrant, enter and search any premises and any person on whose premises if there are reasonable grounds for believing that there is an article or records wherein that has a bearing on the inspection. B, examine any such article or record that is in those premises. C, request any person on the premises to unlock or to otherwise provide unhindered access to any safe, storage, facility or other respect on the premises, or to point out any other person on the premises who can do so. B, request information about any article, document, or record that has a bearing on the inspection. E, take extract from or make copies of any book, computer, documents, or record that is in or in the premises and that has a bearing on the inspection. F, use any computer system on the premises that has a bearing on inspection, or require assistance of any person on the premises to use the computer system. 2, number 1, search any data contained in or available on the computer system, or B, reproduce any record from that data. G, there is any output from that computer for examination and copying, each attach if necessary, attach and if necessary remove from the premises for examination and safekeeping anything that has a bearing on inspection, and I seize any and retain any such validity fund certificate, book records or any other document that may support evidence of such an ability conduct under this act, provided that the person from whom the validity fund certificate, book or records or other document was taken shall, at his or her request, at his or her expense, be allowed to make copies thereof or extract therefrom under the supervision of the inspector concerned. Subsection 4, the search warrant contemplated in Subsection 3 may only be issued for the search warrant contemplated in Subsection 3 may only be issued by a judge or a magistrate if it appears from the information given by the inspector under oath or information that there are reasonable grounds of suspecting that the contravention of the act has occurred or is occurring. B, a search of the premises is likely to yield information pertaining to the alleged contravention. And C, the search is reasonably necessary for the purpose of enforcing the act. The search warrant, subsection 5, the search warrant must identify the premises that may be entered and search and specify the parameters within which the inspector may perform and enter search and seize. 6, the search warrant is valid only until the warrant is executed. B, the warrant is cancelled by the person who issued it or in that person's absence by any person in similar authority. C, the purpose of issuing it has lapsed, or D, the expiry of 1 month after the date it was issued, whichever occurs first. Subsection 7, the warrant may be executed only during the hours of 8 o'clock and 1700 of the day, other than Saturday, Sunday, or public holidays, unless the judge or the magistrate who issued it authorized that it must be executed at any other time than is reasonably in the circumstances. Clause 8, immediately before commencing with the execution of a search warrant, the inspector executing that warrant must A, if the owner or person in control of the premises to be searched is present, one, provide identification to that person and explain to that person the authority by which the warrant is being executed, and Roman 2, and has extract copies of the warrant and of which sections of that person or to that other name, you know, a person's name in it, or B, if no person is present, affects or extracts a copy of the search warrant at the entrance of the premises in a prominent and visible place. 9, the inspector authorized to conduct such entry and search in terms of the search warrant issued in terms of Section 3 may be accompanied and assisted by one or more police officers. 10, the inspector and any police officer accompanying the inspector must, when entering and searching any premises in terms of the search warrant, conduct that entry and search with strict regard to decency and every person's right to dignity, freedom, security, and privacy. 11, during any search, only a female inspector or a police officer may search a female person, and only a male inspector or a male police officer may search a male person. 12, an inspector who removes anything from the premises during the search, anything from the premises being searched must A, issue a written receipt for each to the owner of or person in control of the premises, insufficient details to identify each specified thing so removed, and B, return it as soon as practically after achieving the purpose for which it was removed to the person whom whose control it was taken, unless it is to be used as evidence in any subsequent proceedings, in which case the inspector must forthwith in writing inform the person from whose control it was taken of that fact. Subsection 13, during a search during a search conducted under a search warrant, a person may refuse to permit the removal of an article, document, or record on the ground that it contains privileged or protected information, but that person may not cause such article, document, or record to be amended, altered, and destroyed until the inspector has been afforded a reasonable time to act under Subsection 14. If the owner, Subsection 14, if the owner or a person in control of an article or document refused to give the article, document, or record to the inspector conducting the search, that inspector may in writing request the registrar or the sheriff of the High Court that has jurisdiction to attach and remove the article, document, or record for safe custody until the court determines whether or not the information is privileged or protected. Section 15, a police officer who is assisting the inspector in terms of this section may use as much as force is necessary, including breaking a door or window of the premises or the breaking of any lock with which prevents the search of any safe storage facility or other receptacle of the premises to overcome the distance by any person to the entry and search. Before using force, a police officer must audibly demand admission or access and must announce the purpose of the entry unless it is reasonable to believe that doing so may induce someone or destroy, dispose, or conceal the article, document, or record that form part of the search or is otherwise relevant to the search. 17, a person who submits any information to an inspector or make any statement to him or her may indicate to the inspector that he or she claims confidentiality in respect of any information or statement so provided, and the inspector must deal with such information in accordance with the relevant law. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Robert.
Thank you,
Chair.
I just want to check because I remember previously we had a conversation about the sending of the scenes and feature search and seize of documents without a warrant of arrest. And I see there's a category, particularly point number C, where it talks about making extracts of copies and stuff. And I see that when we go down in terms of what can happen in the event of a search warrant, we are far more extensive. So I just want to find out, because I can't remember what was the status of that conversation, but I do remember there was legal consent around it, particularly the extraction of documents without a search warrant. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You will remember actually the even the reason why you are having this in front of us was because of the Oxfam Alliance, which was challenging the issue of the search and seizure, because the estate agent access board was not fixed. So what now has happened is that this chapter, this text subsection, is taken as it is from how the police does search and seizure, as I said. So because the previous one was not explicit, so that's why they have challenged it, because the inspectors of the estate agent access board were not empowered to do search and seizure, but they did. And that's why there was that legal in the court. So that's why now it becomes explicit here in the details to prevent the same of in both levels.
No, thank you, Chair. I think you're correct, because in this particular provision, we're providing you with different materials in that. For example, in particular, if there is a private residence in particular, that's why the court is referring to the point that you need to have those particular defined processes, in terms of the session visa. In terms of that, if the business is a private residence, that particular point of protection and as a raised over the Constitutional Court was of course raised. That's why, Chair, you are right that the different categories, that if a business premise is a private residence, it's a different process, it's a different working at all. And that was guided in terms of the guidance and also the premise of this which has been set by the Constitutional Court as well, as to how to craft this particular provision. And it was consulted extensively with the legal assessor in respect of how we
should know. Okay. So that's why it seems like it's detailed, because it has to be detailed to cover all the different areas.
Thank you, sir. On page 19, compliance notices. Clause 26, the minister must from time to time determine a contravention of the act that are for a minor nature, and two, and B, contravention of the act that are of a substantial nature. Subsection 2, the minister must publish the determinations referred to subsection 1 by noticing the Gazette, and the authority must publish the determinations on its website and via any other medium of other media it deems fit. Subsection 3, the minister must, by notice to the Gazette, prescribe the minimum fines in respect of each type of the contraventions which the authority may determine for the purposes of subsection 5, provided that such a maximum fine may not for a particular year exceed the amount prescribed in respect of 1 year of imprisonment in accordance with the Adjustment of Fines Act 1991, Act No. 109 of 1991, at any particular moment in time. Subsection 4, the authority may, where an inspection or an investigation by an inspector indicate a contravention of this act, which is of a minor nature or which is of minor nature as determined under subsection 1, issue a compliance notice in a prescribed format to the person so allegedly contravening this act, calling on that other person to comply with this act within a period specified in the compliance notice, which period must be reasonable in the circumstances. Subsection 5, the authority may, in the compliance notice, determine a fine to be paid by the person concerned in such, if such person in writing on the compliance notice acknowledges his or her or its failure to comply with this act as stated in the compliance notice. A fine contemplated in subsection 5 must be paid to the authority within a period specified in the compliance notice. 7. A fine paid in consequence of a compliance notice accrues to the fund, and the person named in that notice may not be prosecuted for having committed such contravention. 8. Any contravention of a minor nature may not be taken into consideration when considering any application by or other proceedings against the person concerned. Thank you, Chair.
Any comments?
Thank you, Chair. Fine as compensation, clause 27, subsection 1. The authority may, whenever a fine has been imposed on a property petition under this Act, and taking into account any amounts paid under the mandatory indemnity insurance contemplated in section 7, if any, other than any portion of the fine be applied towards the payment of the compensation of any person who suffered a pecuniary loss as a result of the conduct of that property practitioner. Subsection 2, the authority may, on receipt of a fine imposed on a property practitioner, make the payment contemplated in subsection 1, but no such payment may be made until all appeals in respect of the imposition of the fine have lapsed or have been finalized or abandoned. 3. The section does not preclude any person from referring any dispute against a property practitioner or other person to the OMRAD, but if an award is made by an OMRAD in favor of the person who has received payments from the authority, as contemplated in subsection 2, OMRAD must take the payment into their account.
5.
The authority, Chair. You must substitute the OMRAD with authority.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
You will substitute whatever the petition is. Yes. Chair, lodging of complaint.
Are we happy now with the fine and compensation? Can I close it? All right.
Lodging of complaints. Question 8. Any person may, in a prescribed form, lodge a complaint with the authority against the property practitioner in respect of financing, marketing, managing, dating, hiring, and sale of or purchase of property. The authority must, in writing, within 7 days, acknowledge the receipt thereof and inform the complainant of the case number assigned to that complainant. three, after receiving the complaint, the authority must may require the complainant to submit further information or documentation in relation to the complaint.
Subsection 28. Thank you.
29, Chair, mediation. The authority may, if it believes that a complainant may be resolved through mediation, or B, on application by the person concerned, refer the complainant to mediation as prescribed. Section 2, within 7 days of the referral to mediation, the authority must appoint a suitably qualified person as a mediator. Section 3, the mediator must, within 7 days of appointment, give notice of the mediation as prescribed to all parties concerned, and B, send the matter down for mediation within 30 days. 4, the mediator assists the parties to resolve the dispute. If the parties come to an agreement which resolve the matter or mediation has failed, the mediator must issue a certificate stating the outcome of the mediation. And then 2, serve a copy of that certificate to each party in the dispute. 5, the authority must keep the records of all mediation proceedings, including the agreement where applicable as prescribed. 6, notwithstanding the provisions of Subsection 1, property practitioners may consent to refer an internal property practitioner dispute for mediation by the authority, and the authority may provide such mediation services on a cost recovery basis. 7, if a matter is not resolved as contemplated in this section, then the matter must be adjudicated in accordance with Section 28. Thank you, Chair. Section 30, adjudication, mediation a failure. If a person whom a compliance notice has been served in accordance with Section 26 failed to comply with this act and demanded in the compliance notice, as demanded in the compliance notice, failed to demonstrate to comply with the compliance notice, or failed to demonstrate to pay the fine determined by the authority, or B, mediation has been attempted in accordance with Section 27 but has failed. C, the serious nature of the complaint and the contravention in question of warrants, the authority must cause a notice of adjudication to be served on the person concerned as prescribed. Subsection 2, the authority must appoint an independent legally qualified person as an adjudicator to conduct an adjudication of a complaint in terms of this section, who for purposes of this section is referred to as the adjudicator. 3, the authority may, upon application from the adjudicator on good grounds, appoint independent assessors to assist him or her. Subsection 4, within 14 days of the appointment of the adjudicator must give notice to the adjudication as prescribed to all the parties concerned, and B, set the matter down for hearing within 60 days. 5, the adjudication must be held expeditiously, subject to upholding the rules of natural justice and in accordance with the prescribed procedure. 6, the adjudicator must, upon conclusion of the adjudication, make a determination as to whether the complaint is upheld or not. B, if the complaint is upheld, the adjudicator must make an order which, in the circumstances, is appropriate, and such an order has the status of an order of a magistrate court and must be executed accordingly. 7, the order contemplated in subsection 6 may include a fine which may not exceed the amount determined by the Minister of Justice for the purposes of section 29(1)(a) of the Magistrate Court Act 1944, Act No. 32 of 1944. B, if appropriate in the circumstances, an order that the authority pays not more than 80% of the fine as compensation award to the complainant, and C, any other appropriate order under the circumstances. 8, the adjudicator must appoint validation of the adjudication process, provide the written reasons for any of his or her determination or orders. 9, the authority must keep the records of all hearings, including the order made and written reasons provided by the adjudicator as prescribed. 10, notwithstanding the provision of subsection 2, the property practitioner may consent to refer an inter-property practitioner's dispute to adjudication by the authority, and the authority must provide such service on a cost recovery basis. 11th, subject to the provision of subsection 7b, any fine paid pursuant to an order made by the adjudicator accrues to the fund.
Subsection 50, adjudication. Okay.
Obviously, 31, adjudication appeal committee. 31, any person who is aggrieved by the decision of the adjudicator in terms of section 28 may appeal against such decision to the adjudication appeal committee in the prescribed format. The authority must, within 14 days of the date of which it received the notice of appeal in terms of subsection 1, establish an adjudication appeal committee consisting of 3 independent, suitably qualified persons to hear the appeal. 3, within 14 days of the appointment of the adjudication appeal committee, the adjudication appeal committee must A, give notice of the appeal as prescribed to all parties concerned, and B, set the matter down for hearing within 60 days. 4, the appeal must be held expeditiously subject to upholding the rules of natural justice and in accordance with the prescribed procedure. 5, the adjudication appeal committee must, upon conclusion of the appeal, make the determination as to whether the complaint is upheld or not. B, if the complaint is upheld, the adjudication appeal committee must make an order, you know, which in the circumstances is appropriate, and such order has the status of an order of the Ministry Court and must be executed accordingly. The adjudication appeal committee must, upon finalization of the appeal process, provide the written reasons for any of its determinations or orders. 7, the authority must keep the records of all appeals, including the order made and written reasons provided by the adjudication appeal committee, as described. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. We're going to chapter 6, finances. 22, funds of authority. Subsection 1, the funds of the authority consist of monies appropriated by Parliament, fees paid to the authority by property practitioners, all monies derived from any investment in terms of section 33.2, and D, all other monies which may accrue to the authority from any other source. 2, the authority must utilize its funds to defray the expenses incurred by it in the performance of its functions and the exercise of its powers, but A, any monies or other property donated or bequeathed to the authority must be utilized in accordance with the conditions of such donations or bequeath, and if the authority, after inspection or investigation, has found that the property practitioner failed to comply with any duty imposed upon him or her in terms of this act, Roman II has incurred any liability to pay costs in respect of any proceedings instituted by it in terms of this act for the recovery from the property practitioner of any amount which is payable by him or her or it to the authority or the fund, has incurred any liability to pay audit fees in respect of a audit done or the instructions of the authority in case where the audit contemplated in section 54 has not been done. The authority may recover the cost of such inspection or investigation insofar as it relates to such duty or tax amount of such cost, ordered up to a slight scale, and the amount of such audit fees as the case may be from the property practitioner concerned. The minister may, by notice in the Gazette, prior to the commencement of this act, thereafter annually prior to the beginning of the financial year of the authority, after consultation with the board, determine the fees payable in terms of and under this act. Thank you.
Subsection 32.
Thank you. 33, financial year of the authority is the period from 1st April in any year to 31st March in the following year, but the first financial year of the authority begins on the date that this act comes into operation, and the end of 31st March following that date. Number 22, the authority may invest or deposit money of the authority that is not immediately required for contingencies or to meet the current expenditure on a call or short-term fixed deposit account, which with any bank approved by National Treasury.
Approved by National Treasury. Approved by the National Treasury. Not the other thing.
Chapter 7, J. Property Practitioner's Fidelity Fund. The Property Practitioner's Fidelity Fund, Section 34, the fund established by Section 12 of the SABC CFS Act 1976, known immediately before the commencement of this act as the SABC Fidelity Fund, continues to operate as if it were established in terms of this act under the name Property Practitioner's Fidelity Fund. 2, the following must be paid into the fund. All monies paid as fees in accordance with this act to or on account of the fund. Income derived from the investment of monies in the fund in terms of Section 33, 2. 3, all monies recovered by or on behalf of the fund in the exercise of any rights or actions conferred by this act. D, all monies received on behalf of the fund from any insurance company. E, interest paid to the fund, and F, any other monies accrued to the fund from any other source.
Subsection 84.
Mr. Chair, purpose of the fund. Subsection 35, subject to the provisions of this chapter, the fund must be maintained and applied to reimburse persons who suffered pecuniary loss by reasons of A, theft of trust money committed by the property practitioner who was in possession of the fiduciary certificate at the time of the theft, or B, failure by the property practitioner to comply with Section 54, 1 or 3, 2, no person has any claim against authority as contemplated in Subsection 1 unless the claimant has A, within 3 years after the circumstances given rise to the claim came into being, give notice to the authority of such claim as contemplated in Section 37, B, within 3 years period contemplated in paragraph A, after a written request was sent to him or her by the authority, furnished to the authority such proof as it may be, as it may reasonably acquire required.
Subsection 85.
Thank you, Chair. Control and management of funds. 86. Subject to subsection 2 and 3, the authority is responsible for the management and administration of the funds. The authority may, with the approval of the minister, outsource the management and administration of the funds to any portfolio management company or a financial institution in terms of the Financial Services Board Act 1990 on the terms and conditions approved by the minister and subject to subsection 3. Subsection 3, each member of the board, or if the management and administration of the fund has been outsourced to any portfolio management company or institution as contemplated in subsection 2, the portfolio management company or institution owes a fiduciary duty and a duty of care and skill to the fund, and any such portfolio management company or financial institution may be held liable in accordance with the principle relation to the breach of a fiduciary duty for any loss, damage, or cost sustained by the fund as a consequence of any breach by such a portfolio management or company or financial institution of such a duty. Mm-hmm. Control and financial management.
Not DPS, that.
Not DPS.
Sure.
Okay.
A claim from the fund. A claim for compensation from the fund must be lodged with authority in a prescribed manner. A person, subsection 2, a person is not entitled to claim against authority in respect of theft of trust monies by a property practitioner unless such a person has or before lodging the claim with the authority laid a criminal charge against the property practitioner. The authority must hold an inquiry into the The authority must hold an inquiry in a prescribed manner into any claim lodged with the authority in respect of the fund.
So,
payments from funds. Page, subject to the provision of this act, the following must, whenever required, be paid out of the fund. A, the amount of all claims, including costs, allowed or established against the fund, as provided for in this chapter. B, in the discretion of the board, any contribution in respect of any expense incurred pre-payment in establishing a claim, all legal, accounting and other expenses incurred in investigating and defending claims made against the fund or otherwise incurred in relation to the fund. D, all premiums payable in respect of the contract of insurance incurred by the authority in terms of Section 40. E, the expenses incurred in the management control administration of the fund by the authority, or if the management and administration of the fund has been outsourced to a portfolio management company or a financial institution, as contemplated in Section 26.2, by that institution, as the case may be, in accordance with the terms and conditions approved by the minister. F, grant as contemplated in Section 29. G, any other monies which may be paid out of the fund in accordance with this act. Subsection 2, the minister may, in consultation with the board, by notice in the Gazette, limit the amount which may be paid from the fund in respect of any category of claims. 3, any monies in the fund not immediately required for the purposes of the fund must, on the terms and conditions approved by the minister, be invested with or in an institution approved by National Treasury.
Honorable Captain?
Subject to the terms and conditions that it may be determined, the board may authorize grants from the fund with regards to A, research in future activities relevant to the business of the property practitioner, the maintenance and the promotion of the standard of conduct of property practitioners, 3, the maintenance and promotion of the training standards of property practitioners, 4, the education and training of property practitioners, 5, transformation of the property sector, D, to any association or society of property practitioners for the purpose of the military, that association or society to maintain and promote the interest of property practitioners. C, the amount that it may determine for the purpose of advertising, promoting the services and facilities offered by the property practitioners in general. Roman 2, promoting public awareness in respect of the consumer rights in matters relating to involved property. Number 2, the board may at any time revoke any authorization contemplated in Subsection 1. On reasonable grounds. 14, indemnity insurance. The authority may, in the public interest, arrange any group insurance scheme with any insurer registered as a short-term insurer in terms of the short-term insurance act, 1998, number 52 of 1998, for the provision of insurance to cover property, traditional liability to members of the public, on the grounds of malpractice up to an amount determined by the court. For the one, fees payable by property practitioners. One, a property practitioner must annually pay to the fund a prescribed applicable fee for the validity fund certificate in accordance with the provision of Section 47. B, any amount that the minister may, after consultation with the Minister of Finance and the board, determine from time to time by noticing the address. Two, the minister must, in exercising the powers conferred in Subsection 1, specify a method or standard to determine the percentages by which the amounts contemplated in paragraph A and B of that subsection are automatically adjusted annually on the 1st April of every subsequent year. But the minister may, at any time, override such an automatic adjustment by making a new determination in terms of Subsection 1. and B, the minister must not later than 5 years after making the determination on the basis of Section 1 or Paragraph A, as the case may be, make a new determination in terms of Subsection 1. Cooperation by claimants. 42. A person who lodges a claim contemplating Section 36(1) must, upon request by the authority, participate, cooperate, and assist the authority in respect of any matters concerning the claim. 2. The authority may withhold payment from the funds of any amount payable to the person who fails or refuses to subsequently comply with any reasonable request made in writing by A, the South African Police Service or other organs of the state responsible for investigating or monitoring crime or criminal activities, to cooperate and assist in its investigation of any criminal charges made against the public practitioner, B, the National Director of Public Prosecution, any other prosecuting authority or any organs of the state responsible for other procedure investigations or proceedings in respect of any investigation or proceedings in a court of law of which the relevant public practitioner is subject or a defendant, as the case may be, or C, the authority to cooperate and assist in 1, the investigation of any complaint against the relevant public practitioner, 2, the exercise of the authority rights and remedies against the relevant public practitioner pursuant to the provisions of this Act. 3, neither the funds nor the authority is liable for payment of interest on any amount withheld as contemplated in subsection 2. Action against the authority in respect of funds. 43J. 1. No person may commence any action against the authority for payment from the funds after the expiry of 3 years from the date of a written notification by the authority addressed to the claimant or his or her or his legal representative, if any, informing the claimant that the authority A, reject the claim to which the amount relates, or 2, B, requires compliance with Section 42. Subsection 2, no person may recover from the authority any amount larger than the difference between the amount of the lost amount by him or her and the amount or the value of all the monies or other benefits which he or she received or is entitled to receive out of any other source in respect of such a loss. 3, no right of action lies against the authority in respect of any loss suffered by a spouse, a life partner, a business partner, immediate family member, or a property practitioner by reasons of any negligence or intentional conduct, including theft committed by such property practitioner, or B, any property practitioner by reasons of any negligence or intentional conduct, including theft committed, one by his or her, by his, her or his business partner. 3, if such property practitioner is a company by any director of such a company. Roman 3, if he or she is a director of a company by any co-director in such a company. Roman 4, if such a property practitioner is a close corporation by any member of such a corporation. 5, if he or she is a partner in a partnership by any other partner of such a partnership. Roman 6, by any person employed by him or her as a property practitioner. C, any person as a result of negligence or intentional conduct, including theft, or as a result of any other act or omission in connection with the trust money held or received on account of any other person by any person referred to in paragraph D of the definition of practitioner in section 1. Application of insurance monies. 44. No claimant having a claim against the authority unless under this chapter has by virtue of any other contract entered into in terms of section 40 by the authority with an insurer have any rights of action against the insurer. 2. No claimant having a claim against the authority under this chapter has any rights or claim in respect of any money paid or payable to the authority by an insurer in accordance with the contract entered into in terms of section 33, but such money must be paid to the fund and applied by the authority in accordance with the provision of this chapter to settle any relevant claim. Transfer of rights and remedies to authority. 45. If the authority settles in full in part any claim under this chapter. All the rights and remedies of the claimant in respect of such a claim against the property practitioner or friend or any other person, or in the case of the death, insolvency, or other legal incapability of that property, of that property practitioner or other person, against the estate of that property, of that property practitioner or other person, shall pass to the authority without qualification or the remuneration to the extent of such settlement. From the insurance laws. 46. No provisions of any law relating to insurance applies to or in respect of the fund.
Chapter 7. We move into chapter 8.
Chapter 8, application for liability fund certificate. 47. Every property practitioner, including property practitioners, referred to in paragraph G of the definition of a property practitioner in section 1, must be within the prescribed period and in a prescribed manner every 3 years apply to the authority for the liability fund certificate, and such application must be accompanied by the fees contemplated in section 4. 2. A property practitioner referred to in paragraph D of the definition of a property practitioner in section 1 must within the prescribed period and in the prescribed manner apply to the authority for the registration certificate, and such application must be accompanied by the fee contemplated in section 34. Subsection 3. Subject to section 43 and 54, the authority must, upon receipt of an application contemplated in subsection 1 or 2 and the relevant fees, if the applicant concerned he meets or has met all required provided for in or under this act, or is not disqualified in terms of section 48 from being issued with a valid certificate, issued to the applicant concerned a valid certificate in a prescribed form, which is valid until the 1st December of the year to which such application is made. A property practitioner who applies to the authority for the particular certificate or registration certificate after the prescribed period referred to in subsection 1 and 2, or those applications not accompanied by the fee referred to in subsection 34, must, in addition to the application fee, pay a prescribed penalty to the authority, and the authority may not issue the particular certificate to the property practitioner concerned until the penalty has been paid. Subsection 5, a property practitioner may not use or display a lapsed valid certificate. 6, a property practitioner must, upon request from any relevant party, produce a valid certificate or certified copy thereof. 7, a property practitioner whose contact details change during the period of the validity of his, her or his valid certificate must, within 14 days of such a change, or change taking place in writing, provide authority with his or its new contact details. Prohibition of rendering services without a valid certificate. 48. No person or entity may act as a property practitioner unless, in addition to any other requirements provided for him or under this Act, A, he or she or it has been issued with a valid certificate contemplated in section 47. B, if he or she or it employs any other person as a property practitioner, that person has also been issued with a valid certificate contemplated in section 47. 2, if an entity is a company, close corporation, such a partnership, every director of such a company, every member of such a close corporation, every trustee of such a trust, and every partner of such a partnership, as the case may be, must have been issued with a valid certificate contemplated in section 47. Any person who contravenes or fails to comply with subsection 1 is guilty of an offense. 4. A person who contravenes or fails to comply with subsection 1 must, immediately upon receipt of a request from any other relevant party in writing, repay any amount received in respect of or is a result of any other of any property transaction during such court transaction. Five, a person who failed to comply with the request on the basis of section 4 is due to an offence. Six, the provision of this section applies irrespective of a what affiliation of a person or entity is described by, or whether he or she is, or whether he or she or it is registered, certified, appointed to act in terms of, or under or for purpose of any other act. Denied, mandatory time period for issuing certificates. The authority must within 30 days, within 30 working days, consider any application subject to submitted to it in terms of this act, which fully meets the prescribed requirements, unless the authority on good grounds in writing informs the applicant of the reasons why the period is to be extended, provided such extension may not exceed 20 working days. The period of 30 working days contemplated in subsection 1 commences afresh if the authority requests the applicant to submit additional information or to correct the said application. If the authority failed to comply with subsection 1, the application is deemed to have been approved and the authority must, upon written request by the applicant within 10 working days, issue the applicant with the relevant certificate. Disqualification of the issue of a different certificate. The authority may not issue a different certificate to any person who is not a South African citizen or does not lawfully reside in the Republic. Roman 2, has at any time in the preceding 5 years been found guilty of contravening this act, the Independent Internet Act, or any similar legislation in any other jurisdiction. Has been found in any civil or criminal proceeding by the court of law, whether in the Republic or elsewhere, to have acted fraudulently, dishonestly, unprofessionally, dishonorably, or in breach of any of a fiduciary duty, or of any other offences for which such person has been sentenced to imprisonment without an option of a fine. B. Is of a sound mind. 5. Has at any time in the preceding 5 years, by reasons of improper conduct, been dismissed from a position of trust. 4. Is an unrehabilitated insolvent. 5. Is not in possession of a valid tax certificate. 6. Has been prohibited by any legislation enacted in the Republic or elsewhere from practicing as a property practitioner or from occupying a position of trust, including any juristic person to whom the disqualification of subparagraph from 2, 3, or 4, and 5 applies with the necessary changes. 7. Has been found guilty by a competent tribunal or a court of law of unfairly differentiating, distinguishing, excluding directly or indirectly anyone on the basis of race, gender, sex, pregnancy, material status, ethnic, social orientation, color, sex, orientation, age, disability, religion, beliefs, culture, language, and birth. 6. Is not in possession of the valid BEE certificate. B. Any property petitioner who, or if such property petitioner is a company, any director or a member of the management of that company, or if such a property petitioner is a close corporation, any member referred to in paragraph 8 of the definition of property petitioner in section 1, or if such a property petitioner is a trust, any trustee, or if such a property petitioner is a partnership, any partner who, in the preceding 5 years, has been found guilty of the contravention of this act, or the Independent Act, does not comply with the prescribed standard of training, does not have the practical experience determined by the authority, or has at any time been guilty of any act or omission respect of which any person has to be compensated or given to the provision of Section 38 from the fund, unless the petitioner has repaid the relevant amount in full to the authority, or the authority is of the opinion that satisfactory arrangement for the settlement of such amount has been made and has confirmed such arrangement. C. Any property petitioner contemplated in paragraph A of the definition of property petitioner in section 1, if such property petitioner carries or intend to carry on the business as a prosecuting officer under a trade name which is identical or confusingly similar to the trade name of another property practitioner already issued with a particular certificate, or whose particular certificate is suspended or has lapsed or has been withdrawn in terms of his act, or any property practitioner who is a director of a company or who is a member of the section in paragraph B of the definition of a property practitioner in section 1 of the corporation, one of which a particular certificate was withdrawn by the authority in terms of section 2, or two, which was prohibited in terms of section 48 from operating anyway on his tax, savings, or other interest bearing accounts referred to in terms of that section.
The following, if it's a partnership, any partner. If it's a trust, any trustee. Continue.
Amendment of a different certificate. For the purpose of this section, the holder means the holder of a different certificate. The authority may at any time in writing inform the holder that the authority intends to amend any particulars of the participant's certificate held by the holder, and the authority must provide the reason for the proposed amendment and invite the holder of such of the holder to submit the written responses within the prescribed period. The authority may, after the due consideration of any responses received, including that of any person other than the holder, amend the particulars of the participant certificate and issue an amended participant certificate to the holder. Four, when issuing the participant certificate contemplated in subsection 3, the authority must simultaneously in writing provide the holder with the reasons for the amendment, provide the holder with a copy of any response received from the other persons, and C, request the immediate return of the original participant certificate. Five, a person who, in terms of paragraph C, is requested to return the participant certificate to the authority must do so forthwith. B, if that participant certificate cannot be returned, submit the declaration made under oath or affirm to the authority as to the reasons and circumstances preventing the person from doing so. Six, an amended participant certificate comes into operation on the date on which it is served by the authority to the holder. Seven, if the holder prevents, delays, or avoids service of the amended participant certificate by the authority or attempt to do so, the amended participant certificate comes into operation on the date on which the authority first attempts to serve the amended participant certificate to the holder. Eight, if the authority attempts to serve the amended identifying certificate on the holder but was unsuccessful for the reason that the holder prevented its late, avoided the authority from doing so, the authority must, for the general public information, publish the date on which the amended identifying certificate came into operation and the nature or contents of the amendment in any medium which is deemed adequate for this purpose. Thank you. Withdrawal or lapse of a different certificate. 22. The authority may, whether on its own initiative or pursuant to an instruction issued by a court of law or an adjudicator contemplating section 26, withdraw a different certificate issued to any person, partnership or a trust, someone in the prescribed manner to appear before the authority if that person or a trust without just cause failed to comply with the summons or prior to the date of the appearance stated in the summons has not been excused in writing by the authority from so appearing. B, a company or those corporation if the participant certificate of any director of the company or any member of the those corporation has lapsed in terms of such a supply. Or two, any director of such a company or any member of referred to in paragraph A of the definition of a property practitioner section 1, of which such corporation has lapsed in terms of section 5, or any trustee of a trust, or the person responsible for the trust, becomes subject to any disqualification referred to in subsection 50B, Roman 1 and 3, or section 50C, C, a person or a trust become subject to any disqualification referred to in section 50B, Roman 2 and 3, or section 52. A person who is in possession or in control of any municipal certificate which has been withdrawn in terms of section 1 must refrain from using or displaying that municipal certificate. 2. A court may own good cause or upon application by the authority or any other competent person withdraw any municipal certificate issued to any person and thereupon order that the person contemplated in section 2 or any other person to immediately refrain from using and display the municipal certificate. 4. A municipal certificate lapses immediately and is of no force and effect if the person to whom it has been issued, A. In the case of a natural person, the person to whom it has been issued dies or becomes subject to any disqualification referred to in section 51, and then 2 and 4. B. If the company or the close corporation or the company or the close corporation is being wound up, whether provincially or otherwise, or is deregistered as the case may be. C. If the partnership and one of the partner is sequestrated. D. Or in the case of the trust, with only one trustee, that trustee is sequestrated as well. 5. Any person who is in possession of a notarized municipal certificate which has been withdrawn or has lapsed must immediately return that certificate to the authority, or if that municipal certificate cannot be returned, submit the declaration made under the oath or affirms as to the reasons and circumstances preventing the property practitioner from doing so. 6. A person whose municipal certificate has been withdrawn in terms of section 1 or subsection 1 or has lapsed in terms of subsection 4 may not directly or indirectly participate in the management of any business carried out by the property practitioner in his, her, or its capacity as such, or participate in the carrying out of such a business, or be employed directly or indirectly in any capacity in such a company, except with the written consent of the authority and subject to the condition that the authority may determine. 7. A property practitioner may not directly or indirectly in any capacity whatsoever employ a person contemplated in subsection 6 or allow or permit such person directly or indirectly participate in any capacity in the management or the carrying of his or her or his business as a property practitioner except with the consent in writing from the authority and subject to the conditions that the authority may impose. 8. The authority has no liability whatsoever in respect of the withdrawal or lapse of the municipal certificate, except where the withdrawal was due to the authority's permission. 9. A person, partnership or a trust whose municipal certificate has been withdrawn or lapsed in terms of this section may reapply for the municipal certificate when it or he or she can qualify for such a certificate. 10. A person who uses or displays a municipal certificate contemplated in subsection 2 is guilty of an offense.
It has to be done like this, unfortunately. It has to be done. So I know some of you, your attention is dead. It's almost but it has to be done like this.
53, shall mandatory display of a necessary certificate. 53.1. The holder of a municipal certificate must prominently display his or her or its municipal certificate in every place of business from where he or she or it conducts property transactions to enable consumers to easily inspect it. B. Ensure that the prescribed sentences regarding holding of a municipal certificate is produced, is legible, lettering on any other hand, on any letterhead or marketing material relating to the property practitioner. C. In any agreement relating to the property transaction entered into by him or her or by his, her, or his company, close corporation, partnership, trust, or other entity permitted to conduct the business of the property practitioner includes the prescribed clause which ensures that he, she, or it guarantees the validity of the certificate. 2. Any person who contravenes subsection 1 is guilty of an offense.
Is this the
Transfer account. 54. Every corporate practitioner must open and keep one or multiple trust accounts which must contain a reference to the section with the bank registered in terms of the Bank Act 1990, Act number 924 of 1990. B. Must immediately after opening the trust account contemplating paragraph A, appoint an auditor as described. C. Must immediately after opening the trust account contemplated in paragraph A, and appointing of an auditor as contemplating paragraph B, provide the authority as prescribed with all information in respect of such an account or account and such auditor. And B, and or his or her or its responsibility or designated employee, as the case may be, must immediately deposit all trust monies held or received by or on behalf of that of property practitioner in the relevant account. Despite subsection 1, any property practitioner may invest in separate savings or other interest-bearing accounts opened by him, her, or it with a bank, with any bank, any money deposited in it, deposited in his or her or its trust account, which are not immediately required for any particular purpose, provided that savings or other interest-bearing accounts must contain a reference to this subsection. B. Property practitioners must, as prescribed, provide the authority with all the information in respect of such account. 3. A property practitioner must retain all such money deposited in terms of subsection 1 or invested in terms of subsection 2 until he or she or it is lawfully entitled to such money. B. Is lawfully instructed in writing to make payments therefrom to any bank. 4. Any bank which manages trust accounts for the purpose of this act must, from time to time, as prescribed, submit a certificate to the authority declaring interest in respect of the account. 5. Every corporate practitioner must keep a separate accounting record of all money deposited by him, her, or it in his or her or its trust account, and of all money invested by him, her, or it in any savings or other interest-bearing accounts contemplated in subsection 2. B. Balance his, her, or its books and records relating to any accounts contemplated in paragraph B at intervals of not more than 1 month, and call them as well as all his or her each business account or any other accounts into which money was deposited in connection with any property transaction to be audited by the same auditor contemplated in subsection 1B within 6 months after the final date of the financial year of the property practitioner's contract. And C, administer the account referred to in subsection 1 and 2 in a prescribed manner. 6. A property practitioner must submit after the receipt of an audit report contemplated in subsection 5B, submit that report to the authority, but a property practitioner who submits that report later may, upon payment of a prescribed penalty, make the late submission of that report. 7. Despite subsection 5, the authority may on due course at any time order the property practitioner by notice in writing to submit to the authority within a period stated in such a notice, but not less than 30 days, an audited statement prepared by an auditor fully stating out the state of affairs in respect of the matters referred to in subsection 5. 8. A court may in good cause, upon application by the authority or any other competent person, prohibit any property practitioner from operating in any way his or her or its trust, savings, or other interest-bearing accounts contemplated in subsection 2, and may appoint a curator bodies to control and administer such trust, savings, and other interest-bearing accounts with the rights and duties and powers that the court deems fit. If the authority refuses under the provision of the Act to issue a participant certificate to any property practitioner who applies for a participant certificate, a participant certificate issued to any property practitioner is deemed withdrawn or lapsed without being renewed. Any property practitioner ceases to act as such, the property qualification has become subject to any disqualification contemplated in Section 50. The property qualification concerned must immediately wind up his or her or his trust account, savings account, or any other interest bearing account in a prescribed manner, and pay out in a prescribed manner the amount sending to the credit of any other account to the people's entitled to. 10. Any property practitioner who winds up an account as contemplated in subsection 10, which contains an unclaimed or unidentifiable money, or who has held money in his or her or his trust account, of which the owner or beneficiary who for longer than 3 years could not be identified, must pay that money into the fund to be held in trust. But the fund must, upon application in a prescribed manner by the owner or a beneficiary of such money, and with the provision of sufficient proof, pay that money to that owner or a beneficiary. 11. Any money paid into the fund in accordance with subsection 11, which has remained unclaimed by the person entitled thereto for a period of 30 years, or for a period of 30 years, as from the date upon which such person becomes entitled that entitled to claim that money, is forfeited to the fund. Yes. Despite any other law, the amount sending to the credit of the trust, savings, or other interest-bearing accounts contemplated in subsection 1 and 2 of the property petitioner does not, under any circumstances, form part of the assets of such a property petitioner. Or if he or she was a natural person, has died or has become insolvent, or is or is or insolvent. 13. Despite any other law, no trust money which may have been paid into any account other than the account contemplated in subsection 1 or 2, whether erroneously or not, under any circumstances become part of any such account and does not lose its nature or characteristics as a result of being paid into such other accounts. 14. A property petitioner must annually confirm or update the details of his or her of his, her, or its auditor as prescribed. Duty of a property petitioner to keep accounting records and other documents. Despite any other law, the property petitioner must, for a period of 5 years, in respect of all documents exchanged with authority, give applicable correspondence with his, her, or its employer or franchisor, any agreement incidental to his or her or its carrying of the business of the property petitioner, any agreement mandatory disclosure form, or other documentation relating to the financing, leasing, purchase, and lease, franchising, sale, purchase, or lease of the property, e, any advertising or marketing material related to his, her, or its carrying on of the business or the property petitioner, and f, any other document prescribed by the minister. From the date of the document or probable date of the document, retain that document and must, upon request, forthwith provide the authority with a legible 35 copy of that document. 2. The document contemplated in subsection 1 may be stored electronically if such storage meets the requirements of the Electronic Communication and Transaction Act 2002, Act No. 25, 2002. 3. The property practitioner who contravenes subsection 1 is guilty of an offense. 4. In addition to the duties contemplated in section 54, a property practitioner must, in respect of his or her or its activities, A. Keep at an address in the Republic the accounting records that are necessary to fairly reflect and explain the state of affairs. A. Of all monies received or expended by him, her or it, including monies deposited into a trust account referred to in subsection 4.1, or invested in savings or other interest-bearing accounts referred to in section 4.2. Roman 2, of all his or its assets and liabilities. 3, of all his or her or his financial transaction and the financial position of his, her or his business. Because the accounting records contemplated in paragraph 8 to be audited by the auditor within 6 months after the final date of the financial year of the property practitioner, which final date may not be altered by her or it without the prior written approval of the authority. Property practitioner is not entitled to remuneration in certain circumstances. A property practitioner under no circumstances entitled to any remuneration or other payment in respect of or arising from the performance of any act referred to in paragraph Romans 1, 2, 3, and 4, paragraph 3 of the definition of a property practitioner in section 1, unless at the time of the performance of that act, the property of that act is the property practitioner, and if the property practitioner is a company, every director of such a company, or if such a company pertains to those corporations, every member of referred to in paragraph B of the definition of a company practitioner in section 1 of that corporation is in possession of the participant. A person referred to in paragraph F of the definition of a company practitioner in section 1, and a property practitioner who employs such a person is not entitled to any remuneration or other payment in respect of or arising from the performance by that person of any act referred to in that paragraph, unless at the time of the performance of the act, that person is in possession of the registration. 3. A property practitioner or anyone who performs any function or exercises any powers normally perform or exercise the property practitioner who has received remuneration or other payment contemplated in subsection 1 and 2 must immediately pay that amount to the fund, and any affected seller, purchaser, lessor, and lessee may within 3 years of that money having been paid to the fund submit a written claim in respect of thereof to the fund, together with the necessary proof, and the fund may pay that amount or a portion thereof to the applicant, which is equitable in the circumstances. 4. Any amount paid to the fund contemplated in subsection 3, which is not claimed within 3 years, irrevocably becomes the property of the fund. 5. A contractor may not pay any remuneration or any other monies to the property practitioner unless the property practitioner has provided the contractor with a certified copy of his, her, or his financial certificate valid during the period or on the date of the transaction to which such payment is made, and on the date of such payment, provided that where all the relevant conditions have been met, the conveyancer must pay the remuneration and other monies. That's number 6. Nothing in this section prevents the institution conducting a conclusion of criminal or any other proceedings in respect of any act contemplated in this section or in section 36, 44, and 45. Mandatory damage insurance. The minister may, for the purpose of providing redress in respect of the contravention of the code of conduct contemplated in section 61 or sanctionable conduct contemplated in section 62, describe immediate insurance which a property practitioner must take out and maintain. 3. The minister may, when acting under section under subsection 1, on reasonable grounds, differentiate between categories of property practitioner whom a regulation applies, b. the minimum insured amount in respect of which such insurance must be taken out and maintained, c. the extent to which conduct in contravention of the code of conduct and sanctionable conduct qualifies for redress under such insurance, and d. the maximum amount payable in terms of such insurance. Limitation of relationship with other property market service providers. Clause number 8. A property practitioner may not, A, practice in association with any other person with which or who is prohibited by any law, any professional code of conduct, any code of ethics, a protocol, report, or charter on corporate governance from doing so, or enter into any agreement, arrangement, formally or informally, whereby consumer is obliged or encouraged to use the particular service provider, including an agency to render any services or auxiliary services in respect of any transaction of which that property transaction was an effective cause. Two, the minister may by regulation prohibit any relationship which could harm the interest of consumers. Three, a person who renders any service in contravention of this section is not entitled to any remuneration, payment, or consideration in respect of such services rendered. And if the consumer has paid any remuneration, payment, or consideration of the relevant service provider must immediately upon request in writing by any affected party repay such remuneration, payment, and consideration together with interest. Four, a person who, within 1 month of being requested to do so, fails to repay any such remuneration, payment, or consideration together with interest is guilty of an offense. 59, insolvency and liquidation of a property petitioner. A 59, a property petitioner who commits an act of insolvency, is insolvent or is paid under liquidation, whether provision of finance, is immediately disqualified to be the holder of the rest or the validity fund certificate and must within a period of 30 days inform the authority in writing of any matter contemplating paragraph A and B, or C, refrain from using the displaying that particular certificate, inform his or her or its auditors and the bank holding his or her or its trust account in writing about the disqualification, cease to perform the functions of a property practitioner, inform his, her or its clients, employees, employers of any other affected person in writing of the disqualification. Number 4, 5 and 6, hand over the administration of his, her or its trust account together with all the relevant information and records to the authority. 7, cause any outstanding matters in consultation with any affected person to be taken over by another property practitioner. 2, a person who fails to comply with subsection 1 committed offense. 3, the authority must write down the trust account of a property practitioner contemplated in subsection 1 and effect payment of any trust monies in accordance with the rights of the affected consumers and other persons. 4, in the event of insolvency and liquidation of a property practitioner, trust monies in the trust accounts of that particular prisoner do not form part of the insolvent estate. Chapter 9, conduct of a property practitioner. Application of Chapter 9 and 10. 60. The provision of this chapter and Chapter 10 applies with the necessary changes to any person who performs any functions or renders any services contemplated in the definition of property practitioner in Section 1, irrespective of whether or not that person is registered with or licensed by the authority, and in the chapter and Chapter 10, any reference to property practitioner includes any such person. Code of conduct of property practitioners. 1. The minister must, after consultation with the authority, prescribe the code of conduct. The minister must, after consultation with the authority, prescribe the code of conduct which every property practitioner must comply with. The chief information officer of respectively the authority and the department, as the case may be, must on the respective website publish the code of conduct current at the time. The property practitioner must, on request from the consumer, provide him or her with a copy of the code of conduct. The board must annually advise the minister on the efficiency of the code of conduct and current at the time. The minister may, after consultation with the authority, prescribe norms and standards in respect of advertising and marketing by property producers. Function of conduct. 62. A property practitioner is guilty of a dysfunction of conduct if he or she or it in the same transaction acts as a property practitioner on behalf of two or more persons whose interests are not in all material respects identical in respect of the transaction and receive remuneration from all parties concerned in respect of the transaction unless all affected persons in writing agree thereto. B. Fails in respect of any act performed by him or her or it as a property practitioner to give a full and a proper explanation in writing within 30 days of being called upon by the authority in writing to do so to any person having a material interest in the performance of such a thing. 3. Fails to pay any money due to the authority or in respect of the fund within 1 month after such money became due. 4. D. Fail to finish in writing within a period determined by the authority any information that the authority has requested in writing and reasonably requires in order to properly exercise its powers under this Act. E. Fail to comply with or contravene any provisions of the Code of Conduct. F. In his or her capacity as a director of the company or a member of the contemplated in paragraph B of the definition of the property particular in section 1. Of the close corporation a trust or a trustee of a trust, which is a property practitioner, and fail to comply with section 51, did not take all reasonable steps to prevent such failure. G. Carries on an undesirable practice prohibited under section 63. Commit an offense involving an element of dishonesty. I. Fails to inform the authority within 14 days of a change in his, her, or its contact details. A. Differentiates, distinguishes or excludes consumer directly or indirectly on the basis of race, gender, sex, pregnancy, class, income, social origin, color, sexual orientation, age, disability, religion, beliefs, culture, language, birth, or commits a criminal offense while performing a function of a property practitioner. Or K. Fails to comply with the contravention, fails to comply with or contravenes any provisions of this Act. 2. Subsequent notification or correction of any conduct contemplated in subsection 1 does not constitute a defense. 3. If a property practitioner is found guilty of sanctionable conduct, the authority may, after the application of section 3 and 5 of the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act 2000, Act No. 2 of 2000, withdraw the particular certificate of that property practitioner, impose on that property practitioner a fine not exceeding the maximum amount determined by the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services for the purposes of Section 29.1A of the Medical Court Act of 1944. Reprimand that property practitioner and note his, her, or its transgression on his website. Provided that the authority may suspend payment of a fine or any portion thereof, or the withdrawal of any particular certificate for a period of not exceeding 3 years, and on a further condition that the authority may determine. 4. The acquittal or conviction of a property practitioner by any court of law upon any criminal charges is not a bar to proceedings against him or her or it under this Act. On charge of sanctionable conduct, despite the fact that set forth in the charge of sanctionable conduct continuing, if proved, the offence set forth in the criminal charge, on which he, she, or it was not acquitted or convicted, or any other offence on which he or she or it might have been convicted at his, her, or its trial on that criminal charge. And these are our practices. 3. Subject to subsection 2, the minister may, after consultation with the board, by notice in the Gazette, declare a particular business practice in the property market to be undesirable and consequently prohibited. when deciding whether or not a declaration contemplated in subsection 1 should be made, the minister and the board must consider the right of every citizen to freely choose their trade, occupational profession, that the person's concern directly or indirectly has or is likely to have the effect of damaging the relationship between property practitioners or any specific property practitioner, on the other hand, and any specific consumer categories of consumers or the general public, on the other hand. Number 2, unreasonably prejudicing any consumer or category of consumer. 3, deceiving any consumer or category of consumer, or unfairly affecting any consumer or category of consumers. And C, that if the practice is allowed to continue, one or more of the objects of this act, as contemplated in section 2, will or is likely to be defeated. 3, the authority may issue a compliance notice contemplated in section 26, directing a property practitioner who, on or after the date of the publication of the notice contemplated in subsection 2, carries on the business practice in contravention of that notice, to rectify to the satisfaction of the authority anything which was caused by or arose out of the carrying out of the business practice contract, or otherwise deal with the matter as authorized by this act or any other applicable laws. Suspension of candidate property practitioners. 64. A candidate property practitioner may not draft or complete any documents or clause in a document. A. Conferring any mandate on any property practitioner to perform any act referred to in paragraphs A, C, or D of the definition of a property practitioner relating to the sale or lease of a property. 2. A person who contravenes subsection 1 of a property practitioner who allows an act contemplated in subsection 1 is not entitled to any payment, remuneration, consideration, or damage in respect of or by person or by reasons of any document contemplated in that subsection, or for bringing about the transaction or agreement embodied in that document. 3. In any proceedings in respect of sanctionable conduct, it is no defense that the principal property practitioner was not aware of the act or omission of the property practitioner or the candidate property practitioner. 4. A principal property practitioner who conducts business from more than one business premises must supervise and control the property practitioner and candidate property practitioners in his, her, or its employ, despite the fact that those property practitioners conduct their businesses in branches or other offices. Franchising. The franchisee property practitioner may not carry on a business under the name of a franchisee unless the franchisee property practitioner is the holder of the franchisee fund. A franchisee property practitioner must disclose clearly, unambiguously, in all his, her, or its written communication, advertising, marketing material that he, she, or it operates in terms of the franchise agreement, as well as the name of the franchisor. The authority may withdraw the franchise certificate of a franchisee property practitioner who carries on a business in contravention of subsection 1 and 3.
Yeah.
Provision of conduct of influence issue of certificates. 6. A property practitioner may not in any way offer or receive financial or other incentives to or otherwise influence a person who, at the request of the seller or the lessor, issue a certificate required by law based on his or her expert opinion in respect of the condition, defect, or electricity wiring, the presence of water and dam, any other relevant matters or conditions which may be prohibited or in any law. 2. A property practitioner who contravenes subsection 1 or a person who accepts any such incentives is guilty of an offense. Chapter 10, Consumer Protection Mandatory Disclosure Form. 7. a property producer must A, not accept a mandate unless the seller or the sole of the property has provided him or her with a full completed signed mandatory disclosure in the prescribed form. B, provided a copy of the completed mandatory disclosure form to a prospective purchaser of the C who intend to make an offer for the purchase or lease of the property. Two, the completed mandatory disclosure form signed by all the relevant parties must be attached to any agreement for the sale or lease of the property and forms an integral part of that agreement. But if such a disclosure form was not completed, signed and attached, the agreement must be interpreted as if no defects or deficiencies of the property were disclosed to the purchaser. Three, a property purchaser who fails to comply with Section 1 may be held liable by an affected consumer. Nothing in this section prevents the authority from taking action against a property practitioner or imposing an appropriate sanction. Nothing in this section prevents the consumer for his or her own account from undertaking a property inspection to confirm the state of the property before finalizing the transaction. Agreement 68. An agreement to sell and purchase or to let or hire the property or the mandatory disclosure form contemplating Section 67 must be drafted by the developer or the seller, as the case may be, for his, her, or his own account. Two, the authority must publish from time to time an updated version of guidelines agreements on its website. Consumer education and information. The authority must from time to time conduct campaigns to educate, inform the general public of their rights in respect of property transactions and property practitioners of their functions, duties and obligations. Two, a property practitioner owes a buyer and a seller a duty of care. 11 general regulations. For 70, the minister may, subject to subsection 2, make regulations regarding any matters that may or must be prescribed in terms of this act, or any incidental matters of a procedural or administrative nature that the minister considers necessary to prescribe in order to achieve the objects of this act. Before making any regulations, the minister must consult the board and publish the proposed regulations for public comment and allow at least 30 days for submission of such comments. Penalties. A person convicted of an offense in terms of this act is liable to a fine or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 10 years. Delegation of a power. The minister may, subject to subsection 2 and 3, delegate any power or duty assigned to him or her in terms of this act, excluding the power to make regulations contemplated in section 70, to the director general or to any other senior officials in the department. A delegation in terms of subsection 1 is subject to any limitation, conditions and directions the minister may impose, must be in writing. C, may include the power to sub-delegate. D, does not divest the minister of the responsibility concerning the exercise of the power or the performance of the duty. 3, the minister may confirm, vary or revoke any decision taken in consequence of the delegation or sub-delegation in terms of the provision of this act or the Integrity Affairs Act. A quarterly report must be submitted to the minister in respect of any power or duty delegated or duty delegated in terms of subsection 1. Legal proceedings against the authority. Any legal proceedings against the authority must be instituted in accordance with the Institution of Legal Proceedings Against Certain Offences of State Act 2002, Act No. 40 of 2002. The authority is, for the purposes of subsection 1, deemed to be a organ of the state contained in paragraph C of the definition thereof in section 1 of the said act. Use of the name of authority. 74. Unless authorized in writing by the authority to do so, no person other than the board or authorized employee of the authority may in any way use the name of the authority, B, represent or make use of description, logos, designs, or advertising material used or owned by the authority, or anything which a reasonable person will interpret to refer to the authority except as provided for in this act, or C, use a description signifying or implying some connection between that person and the authority except as provided for in this act. 2, any person contravenes subsection 1 is guilty of an offense. Transitional provisions, 75. Number 1, upon the commencement of this act, A, the juristic person known as the Estate Agency Affairs Board established by section 2 of the Estate Agency Affairs Act and any committee of the Estate Agency Affairs Board appointed in terms of this act is hereby disestablished. 2. B. The members of the Estate Agency Affairs Board in office immediately before this act takes effect becomes members of the Property Practitioners Board and must be regarded as having been appointed to the Property Practitioners Board in terms of section 7. C. The members contemplated in paragraph B hold office for the unexpired period for which such members have been appointed as a member of the Estate Agency Affairs Board, as at the date of such members' assumption of office in the Property Practitioners Board in terms of paragraph B. D. Every person employed permanently by the Estate Agency Affairs Board immediately prior to the commencement of this act is regarded as being appointed in terms of section 17. E. Remuneration and other terms and conditions of service of any person contemplated in paragraph D may not be less favorable than the remuneration, terms and conditions applicable to that person immediately before the commencement of this act, and he or she remains entitled to all the rights, benefits, privileges to which he or she was entitled immediately before that date, including employer contribution to a pension fund, Roman 2, employer contribution to a medical aid scheme, Roman 3, employee contributions in connection with membership of a pension fund or medical aid scheme, Roman 4, accrued pensionable service, 3, accrued leave benefits, 5, retirement at a specific age. F. Every person contemplating paragraph D remains subject to any decision, proceedings, rulings, directions applicable to that particular person immediately before the commencement of this act. G. Any proceedings against a person which were instituted in terms of or under the Estate Agency Affairs Act immediately before the commencement of this act must be disposed of as if that act has not been repealed. 2. For the purpose of the Income Tax Act, 1962, Act No. 58 of 1962, no change of employer is regarded as having taken place when a person is appointed by the authority in terms of Section 17. Subsection 3, Chair, upon the commencement of this act, all immovables, intellectual property of the Estate Agency Affairs Board, including all financial, administrative, and other records of the Estate Agency Affairs Board, and all documents in the possession of the Estate Agency Affairs Board, is transferred to the authority, which then acquires such property. B. The rights, duties, liabilities, and obligations relating to the Estate Agency Affairs Board are transferred to the authority. C. The Estate Agency Affairs Board is substituted by the authority as a litigant in all pending litigation all proceedings. And lastly, all valid and binding agreements entered into by the Estate Agency Affairs Board shall be binding on the authority as if the authority has been has been the contracting party. Section clause 4, all funds of the Estate Agency Affairs, all funds of the Estate Agency Priority Fund immediately become, immediately before the commencement of this act, upon commencement of this act, transferred to the funds, and a claim for compensation instituted against the Estate Agent Priority Fund become before commencement of this act must be paid from the fund if such claim is successful. 5. Any claim with regards to the theft of trust money by the property practitioner committed before the commencement of this act or failure of the property practitioner to comply with Section 35(1) or 2 or E of the Estate Agency Affairs Act, in respect of which no proceedings were instituted before the commencement of this act, must within 2 years of the commencement of this act be instituted and then finalized in accordance with the Estate Agency Affairs Act, as if that act has not been repealed. Lastly, Chair, all regulations made in terms of the Estate Agency Affairs Act remain in force and effect as if they have been made in terms of or under this Act. 76 to repeal. The Estate Agency Affairs Act, 1976, Act Number 112 of 1976, is hereby repealed. Lastly, short title and commencement. Number 77, this Act is called the Property Practitioners Act of 2018 and comes into operation on the on a date fixed by the President by proclamation in the cabinet. That's correct.
Can give you all our water. Thank you very much. That's the bill, Honourable Member, up to clause 77. Are we comfortable? Honourable Member?
From the onset, especially the enormous work that has been put in by the team in terms of submissions, having through their work and so on, it gives comfort that a lot of clauses that we requested, chapter 4, in particular, and the rest other part that deals with the fourth but Chair, when we were dealing interaction with the other stakeholders, we got a lot of positive feedback, but we must also be reminded that not everybody was in the election with regard to the transformation, with regard to the new regulations and so forth. And with all what has been said, it looks like the bill has got remedy, has got some teeth in terms of coming up to those who might not want to comply, or who might want to take an offer. The only issue with me is that there's a prescription of a lot of saying if you do this, it will be regarded as an offer. If you do this, there will be penalties and so on. And I would want to check how much and possible is this act going to be, how is it going to be driven in terms of enforcement, so that we don't find ourselves facing litigation and not being able to take the efforts of what we want to do. Otherwise, I'm comfortable and to the
okay. If I understand you well, your question is how enforceable is the end? is there any possibility of any person who is defined as a property prohibition evade being under law? Is the bill tight enough in that respect? I'm promoting you for today, Benvenia, to the honorable task of
That is why we have the view that on each and every provision need to be explicitly clear, you know, especially with the look. Failure for you to comply, you know, with the particular provision, you'll be guilty of an offence. And if you go to that particular subsection, you see, it provides a very serious remedy that if you fail to comply with that, and then you'll be sanctioned to a period of a particular period of tenure. Normally, somebody is conditional. When they see that particular sanction, they will be dealt with the guilt of an offense. And if you are found guilty of an offense, the act prescribed itself to say that the sentence will be, you know, if you don't want to see the sentence.
Now we hear you. Everybody must be a member of the, must be registered through the thing. Every circumstance. Is there no leeway where somebody can decide
done around the field. But you must also remember that as we make progress, a lot of things also come to mind. Because I think, taking from what DJ just raised, there's an issue of developers. I'm not sure if they're included in our definition. Because you see what happens, Jefferson, there'll be a plot of land or piece of land where development is taking place, and these same developers do their own selling of plots within that piece of land. In a sense, they become developers and also practitioners in a way. Now, I'm just saying that, I'm adding to what DJ is saying, that let's try not to leave anything to chance. Let's tighten this up so that we're not controlled by our own remedy in the next, you know, year or so. So I'm saying probably masibo pe ipeine sithe sifake nomuntu oqonda uba mhlawumbi angade angangeni indawo ekugqibeleni kodwa siyakubakho sirhoba soba itsotswe le nto emva komsebenzi omninzi osewenzile.
I think the argument, Leonard friends, is that look at that definition, tighten it up so that there is no loophole. So that's what we are saying.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, besides that, we are fighting with
yes.
the
mm-hmm.
Just that, we just want that definition.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in respect of what we have just said, all of you members, I need your guidance. Do you want us to adopt the bill now, or do you want us because of these minor amendments to come back again to another meeting, or are you happy because we will then look at this, we will see the thing with this minor amendment, or we could have another meeting tomorrow to look at, otherwise these are minor amendments that I just want not to be my decision to be the committee's decision.
No, Chair, I mean, as I indicated earlier, I think it's just the nervousness of having, you know, people ducking and diving when it comes to implementation. But I think from my side, I appreciate the work, the effort that was put around this bill. And for me, it does address what we've been crying about within this particular sector. And I think it's more now to tighten up the small elements that we've just identified. But having said that, Chair, I'm happy with the bill as it is, with those amendments. Thank you, Chair.
Put 17, Honourable Professor. Thank you very much, Honourable Professor. Who's opposing?
None.
Thank you very much, Honourable Professor. Having then adopted the bill, Honourable Professor, I don't know if you understand the economics of what you have just done. Please. Having realized the enormity of what we have done, this is a piece of legislation that this committee has done in this term and will not be able to do any other one. And therefore, you should actually be proud of the work that you have done. But I'm going to read just a paragraph which then agrees that the Portfolio Committee on Human Settlement having considered the subject of the property professional bill, introduced at the National Assembly at Section 75, referred to it and classified by the joint tagging mechanism as a Section 76 bill, reports the bill with amendments as follows. Are we agreed?
Mm-hmm.
We adopt the report. That is. Thank you very, very much. We are not going to be able to do any other issue. I'm looking at my time. It's almost 1:30. The only thing I would like you to do for me is to adopt the minutes of the 13th and 14th. Which we were dealing with the process of the bill, because otherwise we would have left things hanging in terms of the bill. So those minutes of the 13th at MCOP, and then the 14th at the State Tableau, if I can get a mover. Moved by Honorable Korai, seconded by Honorable Paul. Honorable members. That is the minutes of the 13th, of the minutes of the 14th, and I get a mover. That's fine. Honorable Gadwin, seconded by Honorable Gadwin. Are you happy now, Ms. Kunswa? Because you wanted them to be at your text preparation. Thank you very much. That takes us to the end. Thank you very, very much. You can be very proud of yourself. On Saturday, it happened to be my birthday on November 17th. There's a cake at the back, so you can cut a piece.
Happy birthday.